is ready to fly, and the operations director at Mission Control in Houston reports the worldwide tracking network is ready. Now, if all of these people, thousands of them, and the hundreds of pieces of equipment needed for the flight report, they are ready to go. Flight Director Chris Kraft is notified at the Mission Control Center in Houston that the Gemini Titan 4 is now ready and is committed for launch. So we're coming up at 5.5 minutes before liftoff. From this point on, the count is controlled automatically. This is what is called the terminal portion of the count, where an automatic sequencer takes over to make the final checks electronically. If anything in the maze of wires, tubes, and pipes that make up this 11-story tall Gemini Titan rocket poses a threat to the safety of the flight, the count will be stopped automatically. Otherwise, in a few moments, astronauts MacDivitt and White should be airborne.
We will be getting another report momentarily on the status of the flight. At this point, everything seems to be proceeding smoothly. And if it is, if it continues so, the launch should take place in about 5 minutes. Control will be, from launch time on, at the Mission Control Center, a spanking new room in a new three-story building costing something over $100 million at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. And we expect to get a report within just a few seconds on the latest status in these final moments of the countdown on the launch of Gemini 4. Paul Haney in Houston.
This is Gemini Control, Houston, for the count. T-minus 5 minutes and counting. At T-minus 7 minutes, we completed a spacecraft test conductor status check, and all elements were green and go. At the conclusion of that status check, spacecraft test conductor Frank Wittig of the Kennedy Space Center signed off to Roger McDivitt for a short message, which simply says, "Okay, Jim, have a good flight." In the last minute, the launch vehicle test conductor, Frank Carey of the Martin Company, is conducting his status check. The bird looks just as green as the spacecraft. The count, T-minus 4 minutes and 30 seconds, and proceeding. This is Gemini Control, Houston.
We're in the final minutes of the countdown as the Gemini Titan rocket's guidance system has given its commands to fly the astronauts to a point 100 miles above the island of Bermuda, where MacDivitt and White will begin the longest flight yet attempted by the U.S. If all goes well, they will spend almost 100 hours in their contoured seats to come within less than 1 day of the longest manned space flight, that of Russian cosmonaut Valery Bobisky, made 2 years ago this month. The Russian colonel came within 1 hour of spending 5 days in orbit. Medical men are calling this flight the most critical yet by the U.S. They will constantly monitor the pilots of Gemini 4 as they orbit the Earth. They are gravely concerned about man's ability to survive and sustain weightlessness. There's evidence that without the effect of gravity, man's heart and nerve systems and his bone structure will decay according to the length of time he spends in space. We're counting at T-minus 3 minutes now on the flight of Gemini Titan 4. This will be the beginning of the longest flight yet for the U.S., the longest yet attempted. If all goes well, it will triple the time. We're getting ready now for reports from the Mission Control Center here on Cape Kennedy. This is the one that will be monitoring the flight during the first few minutes, and we have Information Officer Jack King standing by to give us the last few status reports here on the situation on the pad. Now to Jack King at Mission Control.
This is Gemini Launch Control at the Cape. We are now at 2 minutes and 41 seconds and counting. At this final phase of the countdown, we're just finishing up our guidance, final guidance sets for the launch vehicle. All systems are good, both in the Gemini 4 spacecraft with pilots Jim McDivitt and Ed White, and with the launch vehicle on the pad. This is Gemini Launch Control at 2 minutes and 20 seconds and counting.
Heard the latest statement from John W. King, Jack King, in the Mission Control Center here as the excitement begins to mount for the second manned launch in the Gemini program. The astronauts are James McDivitt and Edward White, and it promises to be the most dramatic flight in the history of U.S. manned space. Now, that is with the rendezvous coming up in just about 3 hours from now. Edward White's dramatic walk through space, a 12-minute walk, that is, in orbit across the United States from California, northern Mexico, to across Georgia, off Savannah. He will take it in about 12 minutes and possibly touch the second stage of the Titan rocket booster that will boost him hopefully into orbit in about a minute and a half.
Minus 90 seconds and counting. The launch vehicle has gone to internal power. power. The launch vehicle is now on its own battery power. All systems still looking good in the spacecraft and with the launch vehicle itself.
You'll be receiving reports from Jiminy Control here along. Right now we have NBC's Herbert Keplow outside our vantage point. He's standing by to give you a description of the launch as it takes place. Now we're going to switch you to Herb Keplow.
It's a virtually clearless, cloudless sky, and we should be able to see the booster for a considerable portion of the powered flight. Perhaps 2 minutes. Sometimes on a clear day, you can actually see the burnout of the first stage.
You see it.
And a puff of smoke, which would mean the ignition of the second stage. It comes about 2.5 minutes into the flight. It's warm, sun, hardly any breeze, and as we said, not a cloud that I can see in the sky over the Cape. Shortly after launch, there probably will be a couple of jet fighter planes.
We're looking good at this time.
We see two wisps in the sky, but we're not sure that they're technology, the fighter aircraft, which I just have leaper trails in there, spewing forth from the rear of the airplane.
The last 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
First the plane, the orange and red smoke. Hold on, now lift off. The yellowish, transparent flame coming forth on the forked effect, and the sound starts to rumble as the spacecraft moves up. And in a few seconds, it will start its roll program, which is for guidance. Than the one that carried them through the first 50 seconds. We can no longer see it, but we can hear the last sounds. As far as we can tell, everything is going well. The G-forces should be building up slowly, up perhaps to a maximum on the power part of the flight. There is a puff of smoke which indicates the separation is about to will take place in about a minute. And we see some of the fighter airplanes, two of them, that climb alongside the booster trying to make motion pictures. There's a second trail from one of the airplanes. Make motion pictures in the altitude area of 6 to 10 miles.
The Gemini 4 spacecraft at 1 minute 47. Change in the abort mode if necessary. Doesn't look like it's necessary at this point. We're having some transmission difficulty from the spacecraft. The transmissions are intermittent.
20 miles downrange. Probably now about 30 miles.
We're fine here. 2 minutes and 7 seconds into the flight, and everything looks fine here.
In about 20 seconds, the first stage of the booster should burn out. Then the second stage engines would start, and that would separate.
On my 3, a little high. And again, the report 74 is go for staging, which will occur in a very few seconds.
Staging is the separation of the first and second stages of the booster.
Pilot Ed White advises that he's received an update of data on the computer on board that spacecraft.
Staging is go.
We have staging, and it's been confirmed here on the ground.
We have separation
on the second stage.
Now about 50 miles high, 77 miles downrange from Cape Kennedy. And all we can see in the sky over Cape Kennedy at this point
are you guys the trails, which we know of the general phase of our flight has gone into effect, and he is working very nicely. 3 minutes into the mission, 3 minutes.
70 miles out
of the trajectory plot is right on the line, is right. Both in lofting and all other elements, we're right on the money.
How you can't take it.
Of course, my advice is you can get it. Everything looks great, Jim. Jim has his displays in the spacecraft, but just as good as those here in the control center.
Right. Flight pilot, fighter pilot on all data.
Right.
You're listening to the description of the flight from Paul Haney at the Katsu Communicator.
Thank you, sir. Everything is real good here, flight.
You
Flight Director Chris Kraft, going from console to console here, and from each one he gets a completely confident and assured report that everything looks good. We're 4 minutes into the mission.
In
a very, very calm voice, and it looks great up here. Kraft is advised to stand by for a final status check here. Nice, well, we got a little 5 minutes before Kraft has told Grissom to give Jim McDivitt a go. It's been received, and McDivitt advises he also is go.
In the background, talking to
flight control. Calls from McDivitt to, we've been given a go by Chris Kraft.
Roger.
There's some repeat. Here goes Gemini 4.
We've been informed President Johnson is watching on television
at this
time.
From
Flight
EHF 7.
Go ahead. 5 seconds,
sir. To find out when he separates from that second stage.
Getting to switch EHF 2, Capcom.
Everything right on the money. Chris Kraft, the mission director, has given McDivitt and White a go for their mission.
They should be in orbit.
6 minutes and 50 seconds in. 74 has been asked to switch to another channel to clear up some. Here we come.
This is being relayed through the Bermuda tracking station to the Mission Control Center now.
We will shortly be getting.
Jim McDivitt advises his incremental velocity indicator went in the spacecraft during the separation maneuver, which has occurred within the last minute. Red is mellow, looking forward, 11 right, and 2 down.
This is where he will pull away slowly about 3.5 miles an hour to separate only 300 to 400 feet from the booster.
Advises he's turning around at this time to face the booster.
Thank you, sir.
This will give him a direct check for the distance of the booster.
He says the second stage, which he now has in view, looks pretty. He says it's also tumbling slightly.
1403, Captain, I'm on 1 Alpha. Right in the middle, you're clear for the stage, right? Right, Adam. Go ahead. 87 by 153, Bermuda data coming in.
That is probably the opposite.
87 by 153, Bermuda data coming in.
That is in nautical miles, which would be in round figures a little less than 100 to 185 statutes.
This orbit, the lowest point, 87 miles.
This is Gemini Control Houston, 8 minutes and 36 into the mission. 8 minutes and 30 seconds into the mission. Grissom here, the capsule indicator has just passed to Jim McDivitt and Ed White via our Bermuda station, the following orbital element. 100 statute miles at perigee, 175 statute miles at apogee. This is exactly what the book calls for. We're 9 minutes in. stand by, and we'll be prepared in a very few minutes to play the booster phase tape conversation for you. Stand by.
We might mention that the orbital figure sought here in apogee, this is a high point, is 185 miles. We don't know that this was a mistake on Mr. Haney's part. He could have made a mistake here with this 175 We're going to receive the tape here in just a moment of the actual conversation between the astronauts during the powered portion of flight and capsule communicator Gus Grissom, who made this flight a little more than 2 months ago. Should be coming up any time.
Some of those voices in the background are that of the astronauts. Some of them, the capsule communicator, which would be Virgil Grissom, and then, of course, we're hearing some of, perhaps, the Bermuda tracking station. I'm not sure whether that's one of the voices coming in there. It is at this point, be interested to see whether the second stage is tumbling too much. They mentioned it was tumbling, and this will determine largely whether White decides, when he steps out from the is outside of the spacecraft activity, whether or not to try and touch it. They did say, but he did report, McDivitt reported, that it was tumbling a little.
Yes, he said it was pretty. I think it was his turn.
No, he actually said it was tumbling.
Yeah, and pretty, I think.
So whether it's too much, we'll see.
And pretty close to nominal insertion. We're at 87 by 153. He has a 1 alpha time.
We're listening now to orbital information coming from Bermuda, talking about the altitudes of the orbit. They're not yet listening to the tape made when the flight took place.
He is on UHF number 2.
Actually, the spacecraft is already out of communication contact of the Cape here. In communication contact with Bermuda, fast approaching the Canary Island tracking station. All of this information is relayed very rapidly to the Mission Control Center in Houston.
He should be somewhere between Bermuda and the Canary Islands on his first orbit. He's supposed to hit the Canary Islands at about
14 minutes then.
I think.
Well, we'll be in communication contact. He'll be over in about 20 minutes. That's right.
And apparently everything so far seems to be going fine. They're in orbit. The second stage is in orbit. And now the two gentlemen will be... We haven't heard yet whether they are in that 300-foot separation between the two space objects. But we'll probably get a report momentarily. The first orbit will be used largely by the two men to check the systems in the spacecraft before they go into the very important and intriguing second orbital operations.
I think we're going to get that tape coming up now from Mission Control Center. I hear something sounding like the roar of the rocket in the background here. Yes, this is a rocket roar. This is a powered portion of the tape playing playback.
We are now 13 minutes into the flight, somewhere between Bermuda and the Canary Islands. And as far as we can tell to this point, the flight is proceeding well. The first of what is hoped to be 62 encirclements of the Earth. That sounds like one of the chase planes. This is probably a recording of the first moments of launch with the chase planes. The two fighter planes go up alongside and climb parallel to the booster, trying to take motion pictures at some of the higher altitudes. Of course, they can't stick around very long. The chase planes don't have the altitude capability.
Uh-huh.
Let's see where we are. We're 13-plus minutes into the flight.
Right. We should have astronaut Edward White at this time going into his compartments under the seat, taking out his blood pressure bulb, his Hasselblad blast camera, and his film packs, the 16-millimeter movie camera and its magazines and lens and other equipment that will be needed to carry out the mission during the next 2 hours here. They should be getting some interesting photographs along about now of that booster trailing them. Of course, we would like to know just how far behind that booster is.
Well, that's the big question at this point, and whether they're able to... they will be able to get as close as they'd like.
They have just now moved into communication contact with the Canary Island tracking station. This means the Gemini 4 spacecraft is more than 100 miles above the Atlantic. It's flying backwards. It's less than 5 minutes from shooting over the west coast of Africa. The Gemini 4 is in orbit with its back end forward so that the astronauts can keep a close eye on the Titan second stage. We understand from astronaut McDivitt, the command pilot, that it is tumbling over and over, and hopefully it is tumbling less than one rotation every 36 seconds, or will be by the time we have our spacewalk by astronaut Ed White.
They said, I believe, that the low point of the first orbit is 87 nautical miles and the high point 153.
Mm-hmm.
In order to figure out the statute miles, you multiply that by
1.15.
Yeah. We want to have our own computer to do it.
Yes.
But it's certainly, if not right on, and extremely close to what the desired high and low points were for the first orbit. Of course, they do change orbits later on as they maneuver. They try to perform certain of the operation schedule for the flight.
I think that is pretty close to what they say nominal here. 87 nautical miles would be 100, and 153 would be plus 17 and a half, plus 4 would be 150, 17... 16.
Up around 170 miles.
They're short. They're lower. They're 10 miles or so lower. Right at this moment, Command pilot James McDivitt should be giving his control systems a full checkout. And this is, of course, to see if he can yaw and roll and pitch the spacecraft in slow motion and everything. And he is feeding all this information to the Canary Islands tracking stations. He's now in communication control. During this first orbit, the astronauts will physically check every part of their spacecraft to make sure that it is in operating condition for the extravehicular activity. That is astronaut Ed White's walk in space, which should be coming up in less than 3 hours now. Actually, it would come up, he would step out into space. They left at 16 minutes after 11 Eastern Daylight Time. That would mean it's 17 minutes after 2 Eastern Daylight Time. He should be starting his spacewalk. He will open the hatch about 10 minutes before this, which would be about 6 minutes after 2 Eastern Daylight Time, if everything goes as planned. The launch took place here 17 and a half minutes ago. And we are now approaching the west coast of Africa on this first orbit. And we're still waiting for the tape. We're going to hear now in just a few moments. We're going to get a report from Mission Control out in Houston, Texas. The voice you will hear is Information Affairs Officer Paul Haney out there. Possibly we'll know the position of the spacecraft and the Titan rocket second stage, what the situation is. Any moment now, we'll be hearing from Paul Haney at Mission Control. We have about 30 seconds to go, we understand, and we'll have that report. Meanwhile, the Gemini 4 spacecraft is now over the western coast of Africa. It has passed over the Canary Islands, approaching the continent. Now let's go out to... We're 18 minutes into the flight. We're coming up on this report from Mission Control in Houston. We're having some difficulty, it appears, receiving this report from Mission Control in Houston. And we're over the western coast of Africa with the flight.
We assume that what Haney is doing in Mission Control is gathering all the pertinent data to try and give a status report on the life of the orbit and some of the other essential details. Is particularly interesting to us because of what people hope to achieve in the second orbit, which would be for White to step out of his spacecraft at the end of a 20...
Here we go for that report from Paul Haney now.
This is Gemini Control, Houston. The spacecraft this time is directly over Canary Island Station. It is beginning its passage across the African continent. We are in excellent voice contact now. The crew has switched to a second or a backup UHF channel, which reads much clearer than did the other UHF channel they were using in the launch phase. Communications are coming through there excellently upon contacting the Canary Station. Jim McDivitt was advised that his status was excellent from the ground, and McDivitt came back with a roger, thank you. They've read out their onboard quantities, which which appear to be quite nominal at this point in the spacecraft. They are being updated as to the time and the exact time references for a recovery should one become necessary at the end of the first revolution. We've seen nothing in this first 20 minutes of flight which would make such a recovery necessary, but it's standard procedure to pass this along. We can hear Ed White's big baritone voice booming in now into the Canary Station, being relayed back here. This is Gemini Control at 20 minutes after the hour.
You have been listening to a description of the blast-off and start of the historic four-day Gemini two-man spaceflight, which is scheduled to continue until Monday morning. The experiments in which Major White leads the spacecraft and the craft itself is to be maneuvered close to the burned-out second stage of the booster occur near the end of the second orbit, which will be sometime after 2 p.m. This afternoon, some minutes before the beginning of the experiment, WGY will rejoin NBC for continuous coverage of this spectacular phase of the flight, and always, of course, will bring you regular bulletins on its progress. You are listening to stations WGY and WGFM in Schenectady.
Now, Casey Stengel coming out the home plate with his lineup guard to present to the umpire, the home plate umpire in this game, Mel Steiner. Out for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Coach Alex Lemon. And this is the way the guard reads. For the New York Mets, Bobby Klaus to lead off. He'll be back at second base. At Greenpool, batting second and first base, Joe Christopher. Right field, in the third batting position. Batting in the cleanup spot, Charlie Smith back in the lineup at third base. Ron Sobota has been moved to left field. He'll be batting fifth. Jim Hicklin in center field batting sixth. Roy McMillan, the shortstop, batting seventh. And Chris Catterzell, the catcher, batting eighth. Galen Sisko pitching, batting ninth. Mets are using Joe Christopher in right field for the first time this year, and mainly because he has played right field here in Forbes Field. It's a very difficult field to play because of the slanting wall that extends from the foul pole out toward right center field. Ron Sobota moved over to left field, playing left field for the first time, and left field a little more regular in play. For the Pittsburgh Pirates, who have moved up in the standings, they have a record now of 21 wins and 24 losses, having won their last 12 consecutive ball games. Bob Bailey will be leading off and playing third base. Bill Burton playing in center field, batting second. Roberto Clemente in right field, batting third. Willie Stargell in left field, in the cleanup spot. Don Clendenin at first base, batting fifth. Bill Mazeroski at second base, batting sixth. Andre Rogers, the shortstop, batting seventh. The catcher will be Jim Pagliarone. He is batting eighth, and on the mound, Joe Gibbon, batting ninth. And now the Pirates take the field. Still some twilight here in this area. Lights are not taking too much effect. And this ball game, the first of a five-game series. Tomorrow night, the Mets will play against the Pirates, and the starting pitchers for that ball game will be Jack Fisher against Bob Friend. And now, ladies and gentlemen, our national anthem.
as a former pilot, now first baseman for the Phillies, was to have been honored. However, that was washed away, and the New York Mets are in town now for a single game tonight, one tomorrow night, Saturday afternoon, and a doubleheader on Sunday. Bobby Klaus is up to lead off. He's hitting .213. He has one home run and seven runs batted in. Joe Gibbon with a record of no wins and four losses. Dips into the motion, and here's the first pitch of the ball game, swung on and pops up. Down towards first, across the line in foul territory. McClendon is there, and McClendon makes the catch. So Klaus has fouled out the first on the first pitch of the game. There is one away, and Ed Cranefield is coming up against the left-hander. Cranefield tonight is batting second in the lineup. He's hitting .340. He has four homers and 26 runs batted in. Cranefield is the leading Met batter among the regulars at .340, and Don Clendenin, the Pirates first baseman, is the leading batter among the Pirates regulars, also hitting .340. Here's the pitch, and it's high for a ball. In there for a call strike as Ed Cranefield was taking. Gibbon looks for a sign from Pagliaroni. Has it, and here's the 1-1 delivery. Breaking ball, it misses, low and away. So it's two balls and one strike. Joe Gibbon started against the Mets in New York last Saturday. He faced five men while pitching one-third of an inning. He allowed a three-run homer to Joe Christopher. The Pirates finally won that game 7-4. Don Schwall got the win in relief. Here's 2-1 pitch, and it's in for a call strike. He went to the fastball. It's 2-2. Last year, Joe Gibbon against the Mets won 2 and lost 1. His lifetime record against the Mets is 4 wins and 2 losses. Now the 2-2 delivery. Swung on and fouled back into the seats and out of play. The count holds at 2-2 with one man out and nobody on base. Yogi Berra on the coaching line for the Mets at first base, and Don Hefner's on the line at third. The Mets, of course, were rained out yesterday afternoon in Chicago, so they came on to Pittsburgh a little early. 2-2 pitch. Low for a ball. The count is run full. The Cranefield, 3-2. So the Mets had one tie in Chicago and one rainout and won the other two games, so they swept the series. Here's a payoff pitch. Swung on, it missed, struck him out. Joe Gibbon chalks up his first strikeout of the evening. There are two away, nobody on base, and Joe Christopher is coming up. Joe, a former Pittsburgh Pirate himself, has a nine-game hitting streak going. He's hitting .250 for the season with two homers and 20 runs batted in. Christopher batting number three, and manager Casey Stengel's batting order. In Milwaukee this evening, at the end of a half inning, the Giants nothing and the Braves coming to bat. Bob Shaw against Ken Johnson making a start for the Braves. It's all night action in the National League. The Dodgers are at St. Louis. Houston at Cincinnati. Here's a pitch in for a call strike. The Philadelphia Phillies and the Chicago Cubs are not scheduled. In the American League, the Minnesota Twins this afternoon beat the Boston Red Sox 4-3. The Twins are on top in the American League. Camilo Pascual got his seventh straight win. He has lost none. Billy Mambuchet started and took the loss. Bob Allison had a two-run homer. Here's a pitch swung on and missed. Slow curveball. A two-strike count to Christopher. The afternoon game between Boston and Minnesota, the only American League game scheduled. Two men out. Nobody on base here in the top half of the first. Joe Gibbon from Newton, Mississippi. He has a B.S. degree from the University of Mississippi, where he was an outstanding athlete. And here's the two-strike delivery. Low for a ball. It's 1-2. The umpire behind the plate is Mel Steiner. Al Varlick is at first. Augie Donatelli is at second. And Sam Landis is around at third. The 1-2 pitch. In there for a call. Strike three as he caught Christopher looking for his second strike out of the inning. No runs, no hits, no errors, none left. Score at the end of a half inning is the Mets nothing and the Pirates coming to bat. It's hard to imagine New York City without every kind of jazz, from Dixieland to progressive. Fortunately, you don't have to. Listen.
That's Backstreet Rag, a uniquely American sound. It came up the Mississippi out of New Orleans with the Negro jazzmen who played it to the world. But they didn't stop with Dixieland and the blues. Little David's Fugue by John Lewis is a new sound that's part of a new generation. But whether it's the old jazz or the new, it's thirsty work for the musicians. And when they put down their instruments, they'll pick up a cold beer, often Rheingold extra dry. In fact, in New York City, where there are more kinds of jazz than in any other city in the world, more people drink Rheingold than any other beer. Why do so many people like Rheingold? We don't know, but we must be doing something right.
We'll be going down to the bottom half of the first inning, and Bob Bailey will be up to face Galen Sisco, who has won none and lost two so far. Most of the Mets spend most of the day at the hotel watching and listening to the progress of the American astronauts. And with regard to that, orbit number 7 started about a half hour ago, and everything is going normal now with American astronauts White and McDivitt. We'll keep you posted if there is any news to report with regard to their further progress during the course of this ballgame. Bob Bailey up now. He's hitting .245. He has 3 homers and 13 runs batted in. There's a swing and a foul ball back and out of play. It's strike 1. Sisco is making his 4th start of the season. He has pitched twice in relief against the Pirates for a total of 2 innings, in which he allowed 4 hits and 3 runs. Here's a pitch and it's high for a ball. Last season, Sisco was nothing in 1 against the Pirates. His lifetime record against him is nothing in 4. Sisco looks in to get a sign from Chris Canizaro. And here is the 1-1 pitch. This is way outside, off the glove of Canizaro, comes all the way back. It's 2-1. This is the first appearance of the New York Mets here at Forbes Field this season. It is the last ballpark for the Mets to visit before starting the second time around. So here it is early June, and the Mets are just now making their first appearance at Pittsburgh. As you know, under the 162-game schedule, each team plays in every other park a total of 9 games. So the Mets will play 5 of their 9 against the Pirates in this homestead. Here is a swing and a miss. 2-2. Last weekend, the Mets and the Pirates played 4 games at Shea Stadium in New York. Each team plays every other team a total of 18 times during the course of the season, 9 at home and 9 away. So when this series is complete, the Mets will have played half of their season's total with the Pirates. 2-2 is the count to Bailey at the plate. Sisco deals, and it's in there for a call, strike 3, a fastball by him, and Galen Sisco starts up a strikeout. That brings up center fielder Bill Verdon of the Pirates, hitting .303. He has 1 home run and 8 runs batted in.
And playing center field, number 18.
On the coaching line for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Johnny Pesky is at first base, and Alex Stamets is the coach at third. The Pirates managed this year by Harry Walker, Harry the Hat. Verdon is a left-hand batter. Started out originally in the Yankee system. Here is a pitch that is outside for a ball. Yankees gave up Verdon to the Cardinals when they got Enos Slaughter. Here's a 1-0 pitch. Change, and it's hit on the ground to second. Cross is over up with it. Cranville goes to the bag, and there's a throw just in time, 2 away. Cranville started for the ball at first and then saw Clark would get to it, so then had to hustle over to the bag, to take a throw. 2 away, and Roberto Clemente is up now. Clemente against the New York Mets has been going like a house of fire. He's 11 for 19. That is a clip of .579. Mets couldn't get him out last weekend. His season batting average is up now to .308. He has 17 runs batted in. Right-hand batter. Galen Sisco with the pitch to the right-hand batter, and it's inside for a ball. The Mets with an infield of Ed Cranebull at first, Bobby Klaus at second, Roy McMillan at shortstop, and Charlie Smith at third. Ron Svoboda in left field tonight. Jim Hickman in center. Joe Christopher in right field. Here's a pitch inside. Right field can be a tough one here at Forbes Field because there is a wall out there. And there is a screen also off which the ball is in play. Joe Christopher, having played with the power chair, is familiar with it, and the Met management figured they'd rather have Christopher over there than to have Swoboda over there, Swoboda never having played this ballpark at all. Here's a swing and a foul ball backing out of play. So it is Swoboda playing left field and Christopher playing right. Last year, of course, Christopher was the regular right fielder for the Mets throughout most of the season. But switched over to the left at the start of spring training this year. Because the Mets were thinking at that time that Johnny Lewis would be given a good shot at being the regular right fielder. Here's the 2-1 pitch. High for a ball. So now, Cisco goes behind 3-1 to Roberto Clemente. And Willie Stargell is on deck. Cisco with a 3-1 delivery. And it's low. He walks Clemente. Coming with two men out here in the bottom of the first, and Willie Stargell is coming up. Oh, Stargell's another man the Mets have had trouble getting out. He's gone 7-for-16, that's .438. His season's batting average is .241. Stargell leads the Pirates in home runs with 10, and he is second in runs batted in with 23. Clint Bennett leads the Pirates in RBIs at 27. On the runner at first. No score in the bottom half of the first inning. Four of the field in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Clemente leads at first base. Cisco's pitch is low and away for a ball. Ben Dunham is kneeling in the on-deck circle. Four of the field, scene of the 1960 World Series between the Yankees and the Pittsburgh Pirates. 1-0 pitch, throwing it on the ground to second, taken by Klaus, and thrown on in time, and Stargell ground drive Klaus to claim goal. No runs, no hits, no errors, one left, and the score at the end of an inning is a Mets nothing and the Pirates nothing. Mets will be coming home to Shea Stadium Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night against the San Francisco Giants, Friday night, Saturday afternoon, and a doubleheader on Sunday against the Los Angeles Dodgers. If you'd like to purchase tickets for any future games of the New York Mets at Shea Stadium, the advance ticket window at Shea Stadium is open 7 days a week. It's open weekdays 8 to 6 and weekends from 9 to 5. There is a Mets ticket office for the special convenience of commuters at Pennsylvania Station and another at the Grand Central Terminal. At Penn Station, it's in the Long Island Railroad waiting room. Open weekdays 8 to 6, Saturdays 8:30 to 4 at Grand Central at the foot of the 42nd Street and Vanderbilt Avenue ramp. Open weekdays 8 to 6, Saturdays 8:30 to 4. For Long Islanders, there's a Mets ticket office at Macy's in Huntington, open during regular store hours. Reservations can be made for box and reserve seats at any of the Howard closed stores in the greater New York area. There's instant reservation service at all Child's restaurants and Calico kitchens in the greater New York area. And tickets to all Mets games may be ordered by mail. Reserve seats are $2.50 each, box seats are $3.50 each. Simply add 25 cents to each order for Hamming and Posty. Address checks and money orders to Mets ticket office, Shea Stadium, Flushing, New York. We pause now for station identification. This is the New York Mets Baseball Network.
This is WGY, 810 of the dial, Schenectady. The time is 8:31.
This is Lindsey Nelson with Ralph Kiner and Bob Murphy at Forbes Field in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And Charlie Smith is up for the Mets. Joe Gibbon deals a pitch. Swung on and popped up foul. Coming on back is catcher Pagliaroni, but it's in the seats and out of play. Well, there's a big Ron Swoboda banner in the third deck here at Forbes Field. Only banner I see of any kind around the ballpark. Charlie Smith, after having been out of the Met lineup with a cold and a respiratory infection, is back in tonight at third base. Here's a pitch. Swung on and missed. And Charlie Smith ripped a few out of here during batting practice. He says he feels fine. He's hitting .276 for the season. He has 5 homers and 20 runs batted in. He was in the midst of a hot streak when he went out of the lineup. A two-strike delivery. And it's a little tight to Charlie. It's 1-2. Swoboda is waiting in the on-deck circle. Ron, of course, was out of the lineup during the Chicago series, but he's back in tonight. He just pulled out for a day or two, trying to get himself reorganized. Here's the 1-2 pitch. Swung on and missed. Strike three. Actually, he kept it a little bit back into the glove of Pagliaroni, says umpire Steiner. And now Ron Swoboda, who has 11 home runs and 28 runs batted in, is hitting .273.
Swoboda, about Taylor had done previously. The pitch to the right-hand batter, swung on and missed the strike one. Hickman drove in four runs in each of the Mets' wins in Chicago. No score.
We are missing the play-by-play for Hickman's at-bat, but he did fly out to Roberto Clemente in right field. There was nothing across for the Mets in their second inning.
We're going now to the bottom half of the second inning, and first baseman Don Clendenin is up to lead off for the Pirates. Clendenin off to a great start with a .340 batting average. He has three homers with 27 runs batted in. Is a tall, rangy right-hand batter facing right-hand pitcher Galen Sisco. Inside for ball, it's 1-0. Mr. John Galbraith, the owner of the Pittsburgh Pirates, is here tonight. Sisco back off the rubber now, Clendenin steps out. Sisco was the captain of the 1958 Ohio State football team. Mr. John Galbraith was one of his big backers, of course. Here's a swing and a ground ball to third, taken by Charlie Smith, and he throws on in time, so there's one away. John Galbraith is one of the big supporters of the Ohio State football team. And Sisco was linebacker and captain of that 58 team. Here's Bill Mazeroski coming up. Maz is hitting .316 with two homers and 12 runs batted in. Well, you wonder where you find baseball players. Sometimes you just find them. He was signed. Maz was right out of a tryout camp. Here's a pitch low for a ball. Nobody on base in the bottom of the second. 1-0 pitch and it's low for a ball. 2-0. Still sort of in twilight time here in Pittsburgh. Here's a pitch low for a ball. As there is a mixture now of daylight and artificial light. Sisco's gone behind. Three balls and no strikes to Mazeroski. Sisco has struck out one and walked one so far. Waiting on deck is the shortstop, Andre Rogers. 3-0 pitch, and it's in for a call strike. It's 3-1. And the 3-1 delivery. Misses low and away, ball four. Second walk issued by Sisco puts Mazz out at first with one man out and Andre Rogers coming up. The shortstop is hitting .340. One homer and 10 runs batted in. For the past preseason, Rogers was the regular shortstop of the Chicago Cubs. Came to the Pirates in exchange for shortstop Bobby Peña, who now is the regular shortstop for the Cubs. And there was some cash in the deal as well. Here's a pitch and it's in for a call strike and a throw down to first not in time. Rogers originally was the property of the Giants. He was signed when a visiting high school principal happened to see him playing softball in Nassau. Here's a pitch, and it's swung on and fouled back. Two strike count. The ushers here at Forbes Field have been re-outfitted this season. They are wearing jackets and matching hats this year. This is a two-strike delivery to Rogers, and it's a little tight. One and two. One man out, a runner at first. No score in the bottom of the second. The end of an inning and a half now. The Giants nothing, the Braves nothing. Bob Shaw against Ken Johnson. Cisco looks for a sign. Mazeroski leads it first. Cisco steps off and does not throw. Pitch swung on and hit on the ground through the hole into left for a base hit. It's charged by Svoboda, and Mass holds it second, and that's the first hit of the game coming off the bat of Andre Rogers with one man out here in the bottom of the second. The pilot Tarabun is at first and second with one man out, and Taglioni is coming up. Taglioni is hitting 232 with four homers and 13 runs batted in. We promise we'll try to keep you posted on the progress of the American astronauts, White and McDivitt, throughout the course of this ballgame. Here is the pitch, and it's in for a call strike to Valurani. Astronaut White is now asleep, and McDivitt is piloting the capsule. Jiminy Control has given the go-ahead to do 18 orbits. White had quite a time walking around outside that capsule today. There's a swing and a foul ball off and out of play. And Andy Rogers at first thought that it was a pass ball, and he had moved up and was trying to get Mass to move on. It was off the end of the batter value on it. It's a two-strike count. Also a bulletin. President Johnson has just announced that he is withdrawing all remaining United States Marines from Santo Domingo. Man out, runners first, second, no score. Two strike count to Pagliaroni with pitcher Joe Gibbon on deck. And here's a pitch just missed inside. One and two. There is action down in the Met bullpen now. Tom Parsons, the long man in the bullpen, in more ways than one. He's up and throwing. He was formerly the property of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Here's the 1-2 pitch. Floats high, and it's 2-2. Valurani last year was out hit on the Pirates ball club only by Roberto Clemente. Valurani had a season's batting average last year of .295. Mazeroski at second, Rogers at first, Cisco off the stretch. He steps off the rubber. Pagliaroni steps out of the batter's box. Now we're set once again. 2-2 pitch. Swung on and missed. Cisco strikes out Pagliaroni for his second strikeout of the night. Two away runners holding first, second, and Joe Gibbons coming up. Joe Gibbons is a pretty good hitting pitcher. He's been up 14 times this year, and he's had two hits. But he's a fine all-around athlete. Started his baseball career as a first baseman. Gibbon is a right-hand batter. Here's the pitch, and it's a check swing foul ball. Back in the seats and out of play for strike one. Danny Murtaugh, who retired last year as manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, is on hand here tonight, and he was in the Mets dugout before the ball game, renewing a few acquaintances. He's still in the Pirate organization.
Murtaugh took over here in 1957 from Bobby Bragan. Here's a pitch and a ten for a called strike. A two-strike count, Notty Gibbons. Second. Here's the pitch. Breaking ball swung on and missed and dropped by Canizari. He picks it up and tags given. The side is retired. No runs, one hit, one walk, no errors, two left. The score at the end of two is the Pirates nothing and the Mets nothing. Well, here's a date you want to make a note of. Saturday afternoon, July 24th, because that'll be the date of the annual Old Timers Day at Shea Stadium. Top stars of the old New York Giants and Brooklyn Dodgers will be assembled from all over the country to appear once again before the local fans. We'll be telling you who they are throughout the next few weeks as their acceptance has come in. The Mets will play host to the Philadelphia Phillies that day. And that game will take place right after all the colorful and nostalgic ceremonies that make Old Timers Day one of the most popular events of the year. The date again, Saturday, July 24th. So make your plans to attend right now. By the way, that will also be Ladies' Day. We're going to the third inning, no score in the ball game. And if anybody should be familiar with these surroundings, it's a fellow named Ralph Kiner, because during his fabulous career in the National League, there were seven seasons when he was in a Pirate uniform that nobody in the National League hit more home runs than Ralph Kiner. Here he is.
Thank you, Lindsay, and hi there, everyone. Top of the third, the first time up for Roy McMillan as he comes up against Joe Gibbons. So far, Joe has retired six in a row, striking out three in the process. Roy, a right-hand batter, and the first pitch by the left-hand pitcher has taken a fastball in for a strike. McMillan batting at 256, one home run and 14 runs batted in. He'll be followed by Chris Canacero and Galen Sisco here in the top of the third. No score in the game. And a swing and a miss. It's strike two. All this game being beamed around the world to the armed forces by Armed Forces Radio, and a salute from us right here in Forbes Field to all of you everywhere. Strike delivery is way inside a slider, and Roy has to pull away. The count now at one ball and two strikes. Twilight still taking some of the effect away from the lights here at Forbes Field. It's a pitcher's night right up to now. Now a line drive to the middle of base hit, and the Mets have their first one. Ball picked up by Bill Burton in center field. Thrown in, and Roy saves it first. So Roy McMillan, the first man to reach for the New York Mets. No one out here in the top of the third. The batter coming up is Chris Canizaro, the catcher. Chris batting 160. He has no runs batted in, and he has been in 36 games. At the end of two, Milwaukee 1, San Francisco nothing. Bob Shaw pitching for the Giants against Ken Johnson for the Braves. Starting pitchers at St. Louis, the Dodgers there. Sandy Koufax going for the Dodgers, and Bob Berkey pitching for the St. Louis Cardinals. First pitch to Chris Canizaro, swung on and fouled at strike one. Bob Berkey has taken over the starting rotation from Tracy Stollard. Tracy coming up with a back injury in Houston. Also scheduled in the National League, Houston at Cincinnati. Philadelphia and Chicago not scheduled. One game complete in the American League. Minnesota playing Boston, winning 4-3 behind Pasquale, his seventh win. The runner goes, a swing, and the ball dropped by the catcher, and Roy McMillan goes into second. Stolen base for Roy. Chris Canizaro on the pitch, swinging at a pitch that was low and inside, protecting the runner. Good play by Chris Canizaro, and it bothered Pagliarone, and he dropped the ball. There was no play at second. So the Mets have a runner at second base. No one out. Top of the third. And behind the two-strike pitch. Back the plate is off of the glove, and it actually hit Cannizzaro. McMillan was off to third. He'll have to go back to second. And Chris, who was brushed by the pitches, on at first. So the Mets, for the first time, have runners at first and second. Still no one away, and Gabe and Cisco coming up. Their young people's future depends on your hiring them today. Call your local state employment service office for details on the Summer's Youth Opportunity Campaign. Galen Cisco, the batter. Galen has been up one time and had four hits. Correction, has been up four times and had one hit. Now the Pirates looking for a bunt, and he swings away and fouls the ball down the right field side by Don Glendinnen, who it didn't close. Both Glendinnen and Bob Bailey charging in, and Galen Cisco not bunting with the defense so tight. One strike count. McMillan at second base, a base hit and a stolen base, his first this year. Chris Cannizzaro at first, and now faking a throw at second base as Joe Gibbons swings around. No one covering there. McMillan back to the bag. Don Glendinnen already in about 60 feet away from Galen Cisco. He's just completely ignoring the runner at first base. Of course, Cannizzaro there has to worry about Bill Mazeroski, the second baseman. Now the pitch back, taken inside, off the glove of Valleroni. McMillan trying for third, he gets in there, no play. Going behind the plate down to second base is Chris Cannizzaro, and it's scored a wild pitch. Ball off the glove of Jim Valleroni. He picked it up right behind the batter, and it looked as though he might have a shot at third base, but he didn't let go of the ball, and Roy slid in with no throw being made. So the Mets now have runners at second and third. No one away in the top of the third. No score in the game. And the pitch back to Kenneth, to Chris. And he swings and fouls it off. The count goes at one ball, two strikes. Once again. Galen Cisco, the windup, and the pitch back to the right-hand batter. A foul ball again, this time on the right side into the stands, and the count holds at 1-2. Infield playing in against the Mets here in the top of the third, hoping to cut off a run. On deck batter, Bobby Clouse. Now once again, it's Joe Gibbons back to the plate. And the pitch bounced to the middle. It goes on through into center field. Scoring easy, Roy McMillan for third, but holding at third base. Moving over from second is Chris Cannizzaro. Chris had to wait at second base to see whether or not Bill Mazeroski could come up with a play. He almost got to the ball. It was a high bouncer right through the middle. But it went on through, and then Cannizzaro moved over to third. So the Mets have taken the early lead here by scoring a run in the top of the third. Still no one away. Galen Cisco on at first base with his second hit this year. He's been up five times. And the batter coming up is Bobby Clouse. Bobby, a right-hand batter, hit the first pitch his first time up. Fouled out to the first baseman. Joe Gibbons in the stretch side and to the plate. And Klaus takes a strike in the outside corner. One strike count on Bobby Klaus. Bobby batting at 213. Now the left-hander back again, and a curveball fouled away, coming straight back at home plate. The count moves up to 0-2. Tommy Sisk, a right-hander warming up in the bullpen for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Mets lead 1-0 with no one out. We're in the top of the third inning. Runners at first and third for the New York team. Two-strike count on Bobby Clouse. Infield back looking for the double play with the exception of the third baseman, Bob Bailey. And the pitch back is low and away. One ball and two strikes. Don Glendinnen at first base, holding against the runner there. Lights are starting to take much better effect now here at Forbes Field. Twilight sort of disappearing. 1-2 pitch, bounced slowly foul down the third base side, taken by Don Hefner. He looks at it and tosses it out to the mound. Count stays at 1-2 on foul. First 45 minutes of this game, certainly a difficult time for the hitters to see, as the twilight had more effect than the field lights here at Forbes Field. Now one ball and two strikes. Joe Gibbon back to the plate, and the pitch taken inside, a fastball. Count evens at 2-2. Two balls, two strikes. Gibbon sets again. And his next pitch is hit high in the air on the first base side. Bill Mazeroski and Don Glendinnen there. Don Glendinnen makes the call and makes the catch. So the Pirates have picked up their first out here at the top of the third. Runners holding at first and third. And it brings up left-hand hitting Eddie Trainbull. Trainbull struck out swinging at a 3-2 fastball at first time up. One of the three strikeouts registered by the left-hander Joe Gibbons. Mets have one run and two hits. The Pirates have no run and one base hit. Runners at first and third. The pitch by Joe Gibbon is hit foul off to the left side into the stand. Strike one. Trainbull behind a fastball, fouling the ball off to the left side. One strike count with one away in the top of the third. The Mets in front, 1-0. And Gibbon back to Crainville, and the ball is fouled again to the left side. This time a curveball fouled off the end of the bat. So Joe Gibbon out in front, 0-2. Giants scored a run in the top of the third against Milwaukee. The score now tied at 1-1, with the Braves coming up in the bottom half of the third against Bob Shaw. Ken Johnson pitching for the Braves. Now the two-strike pitch. Curveball hit deep to center field. This will score a run. Tagged up a third is Canizero. Holding halfway at first base as the run scores across the plate. The Mets take the lead 2-0, Galen Sisco. So a fly ball, a sacrifice fly for Eddie Greenpool, his 27th run batted in this year. He leads the club in that department, with the exception of Ron Svoboda, who has 28. And the batter coming up is Joe Christopher. Right-hand batter was called out and strikes his first time up. Joe has a 9-game consecutive game streak going. Over that period, he batted 382. And his first pitch is outside and low. Fastball moving away. It's ball one. Mets lead 2-0 with two outs in the top of the third. Pirates with a 12-game streak going for them, the longest in the league this year. Now the 1-0 delivery, slipping out of the hand and given. A good play on it by Pagliaroni. Ball two. Ball is high and away. Two balls, no strikes. McMillan got it going with a single through the middle of the first hit for the Mets in the third. Chris Canizero was hit by a pitch ball. McMillan had stolen second, so that put runners at first and second. A long fly ball to right. Galen Sisco singled in a run, and a fly ball by Cranepool got the other. Now Doc Roberto Clemente makes the catch to retire the side. Two runs in the inning for the Mets on two hits, no errors, and one man left on, and the score at the end of 2.5, the Mets 2, the Pirates nothing. You know, there's a lot more to beer drinking than meets the eye, and you'd be surprised at what strong feelings people have about what they drink their beer out of. Some people like to drink beer from a can, and some from a bottle, and there are those who wouldn't drink it anyway, but from a glass. We think a lot of Rheingold drinkers are going to be happy with our new Chugabots. The Chugger Mug is a wide-mouth glass mug that holds 12 ounces of Rheingold Extra Dry. And it even feels right when you pick it up. A little cold brown mug has the shape and weight and gurgle of a good thirst-quenching drink of beer. And, of course, that's what you get because there's Rheingold inside. You don't need an opener either. You just pull the tab and the top comes off with a hiss that sounds like the good Rheingold flavor. Look for the special Chugger Mug displays in your area. Drink the beer that's number one in New York City. And drink it from our little drink-shaped Rheingold Chugger Mug. We think you'll agree that we must be doing something right. Right now we pause for station identification. This is the New York Mets Baseball Network.
810 on the dial, WGY is connected.
Along with Lindsey Nelson and Bob Murphy from Forbes Field in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The Mets leading 2-0 as the Pirates come up in the bottom half of the third. It'll be the top of the batting order for the Pirates. Bob Bailey, Bill Burton, and Roberto Clemente. And on the mound for the Mets, Galen Sisko, who has pitched through 2 innings, giving up no runs, allowing 1 base hit. He walked 2 and struck out 3 in that period. Bailey struck out. He was caught looking at a slider first time up. His average is 244, right-hand batter. Bailey playing at third base, wearing number 7. And Sisko with his first pitch. A curveball low, it's ball 1. Down the left field line in Forbes Field, it's 365. Right field line, 300 feet. The area there guarded by a high fence. Pitch back is low and it's ball 2. Just a shade to the right of center field, 436. Just a shade to the left in center field, over 450 feet. Left center, 406 feet, and right center, 375. So this is a big ballpark. Totally the biggest park in the National League. Pitch back to the plate is in for a called strike. 2 balls, 1 strike. Out in the center field area, a beautiful background of trees and vines. Back of that, a green hill, so it's a good hitter's background. Now, Sisko misses low again, and the count goes to 3 balls and 1 strike. Ballpark located in a very pleasant area. Sisko now at 3-1, and the pitch is bounced in the hole, going over McMillan, the back in it. He has a long throw, and he can't get it there in time. But what a play by Roy. Great backhand stop by McMillan. He got something on it, made an accurate throw, but Bailey beat it out by about a step. So the Pirates have a runner at first base in the bottom half of the third with no one out. Their second base hit off Galen Sisko. The batter will be Bill Burton, left-hand hitting center fielder. Rounded up to second base his first time up. His average is 301. And Sisko down to set position. A look at first base. The pitch to the plate is swung on and missed. Fastball, he was late on it. Strike 1. Burton, the second man in the batting order. The on-deck batter is Roberto Clemente. Mets lead 2-0. And the pitch back to the plate is inside, a throw to first base, and Bailey dives back in safely. Close play and a good tag on the play by Ed Grainville after a good throw by Chris Cannizzaro. 1 ball, 1 strike count. No one out, bottom half of the third. Sisko, a look at first base and back again. And the pitch is on the outside corner. Call strike 2. 1-2 on Bill Burton. Sisko looking for his first win this year. Both pitchers have not registered a victory. Sisko is 0-2 and Joe Gibbon is 0-4. given the only man of the starting rotation not to win a game in the Pirates' 12-game winning streak. Now the pitch back swung on a miss, strike three, and Cisco with a fastball in the inside corner picks up his fourth strikeout. Now you'll face Clemente. Roberto Clemente getting the hand as he comes up. He walks in the 3-1 pitch his first time up. He's batting the 308. Against the Mets, he had 11 for 19 in a four-game series, the first time these two teams met. 579 average. So he's still at that average against the Mets so far this year. And Galen Cisco with his first pitch hit hard through the hole into left field of base hit. On to second base goes Bob Bailey, and he holds there as the throw comes in from Ron Svoboda. So that puts runners at first and second with one away and brings up Willie Stargell. Third hit for the Pirates. And Stargell, the big home run man for the Pirates, coming up. He has 10 home runs and 23 runs batted in. He's batting at 239. First time up, he grounded out hard to second base. Galen Cisco with runners at first and second. And his first pitch to Stargell is a bold pitch. A good play on it by Catanzaro. He moves out to his left to take it just off the ground. Ball almost getting by. It's ball one. Bob Shaw has been knocked out of the box by the Milwaukee Braves in the bottom half of the third. No runs in that we have on our sheet here, but in pitching, Ron Herbel. Game tied 1-1 going to the bottom half of the third. A swing and a slow curveball. One ball, one strike. Ken Johnson pitching for Milwaukee. He was acquired from the Houston Astros about 2 weeks ago. Now Tom Parsons warming up again in the bullpen for the Mets. He was up in the second when the Pirates threatened on a base hit and a walk. But Cisco worked out of the jam. A change curve bounced in the dirt. It gets away, goes over to the Pirates dugout, and the runners move up. Bob Bailey going to third base, and Roberto Clemente on down to second on the wild pitch. So the Giant run at second base now, and Galen Cisco in a bit of a jam. Strike count, and Chris Canizero out to talk it over with Cisco. In the stands here today, the owner of the Pittsburgh Pirates, the principal owner, Mr. John Galbraith. He was very instrumental in Galen Cisco's playing at Ohio State on the football team. John, a very strong benefactor of the Ohio State University. Galbraith makes his home in Columbus, Ohio, and of course has businesses here in New York and many other places. He brought into the Pirates in 1947 along with Frank McKinney of Indianapolis, buying the ball club from William Benzwanger, who had the ball club for many years here in Pittsburgh. He in turn had the ball club from Willie Dreyfus. Now the pitch as Stargell takes outside, misses, and it's ball three. Three balls, one strike. And Galen Cisco a pitch away from having the bases loaded. On deck batter, Don Glendinnen. Now the 3-1 delivery. It is taken low and away, ball four, and that loads him up. By Galen Cisco. Base is now loaded, and Don Glendinnen is the batter. Don grounded out to third his first time up. Bob Bailey at third base, Clemente at second base, Stargell at first. Glendinnen batting at 337 with three home runs and 27 runs batted in. Mets leading by a score of 2-0, but the Pirates threatening. And the pitch. It is hit off the handle, closing back. Little fly ball back to the shortstop, Roy McMillan. He backs up on the grass, takes it and makes the play. Sisco picks up his second out now. Runners holding all the way around. And Sisco will take on Bill Mazeroski. Mazeroski walked his first time up on a 3-1 pitch. He has an average of 316 with two home runs and 12 runs batted in. Mets lead of 2-0. In jeopardy here with runners at first, second, and third. 2 men away, bottom half of the third. And Galen Sisco working hard in the mound. He has the sign. His windup is pitch. High pitch, almost getting away. Canizero one-hands it over the top of the head of Bill Mazeroski. It was a high curveball slipping out and almost going on back to the tree. 1-0, no strike. Set deep, they have a play at any base. Outfield shaded toward left field and fairly deep against the right-hand batter. Wind is blowing in from left field here tonight. Generally, the wind blows toward left field. But it's been a pleasant, cool day all day, and wind from that direction usually brings that type of weather. Now the pitch back to the plate. A drive to left. It's in the air. Coming over Sepulveda. He has a chance for it, and he makes the play. Ron Sepulveda, about 2 steps away from the foul line, taking that line drive to retire the side. So the Mets get out of the jam as Galen Sisco leaves 3 on. No runs and 2 base hits. And the score at the end of 3. The Mets 2, the Pirates nothing. Now a word from Cool Filter King. Top of the fourth, the Mets in front 2-0 as they come up against Joe Gibbons. First man up will be Charlie Smith. Charlie batting for the second time. He struck out at a curveball his first time up. Right-hand batter and Joe Gibbons, a left-hander with his first pitch. It's fouled off and out of play. Strike one. Charlie batting 274. He's been hitting well for the Mets. In fact, was hitting extremely well and was sidelined because of a heavy cold. Now back in the regular lineup for the first time in about 5 days. A one-strike delivery. It is taken away, and it's ball one. 1 ball, 1 strike. Johnny with 5 home runs and 20 runs batted in. Mets score 2 runs in the third to take the lead. They hold it at 2-0. Pitch back to Johnny. Hit hard in the hole. It's in the left field of base hit. Coming in is Willie Stadger. The field of the ball is Johnny Smith. That's it going again. He's on at first base. The Mets with no one away now have Ron Sepulveda coming up. Hit number 3 off Joe Gibbons. It's all even at 3 apiece with the Mets in front 2-0. Ron grounded out slowly back to the pitcher's mound his first time up. Batting at 271 with 11 home runs and 28 runs batted in. And his first pitch is taken outside. Fastball missing just off the plate. 1 ball, no strike. Ron playing for the first time in this ballpark. He has now seen them all. 1 ball, no strike. And the pitch is taken on a swing and fouled away. And the count now at 1 ball and 1 strike. Mets playing against Chicago and Pittsburgh in this trip. Playing in these ballparks for the first 2 times this year. Or for the first time, to be more grammatically correct. Now the pitch back to Ron, hit the right field. Roberto Clemente moving to his left, now waiting, and he puts it away. One out. Back to first base, Charlie Smith, and brings up Jim Hickman. Out to right field his first time up. Batting at 167. Jim with 3 home runs and 11 runs batted in. He picked up 8 runs batted in and the 3 home runs against the Cubs in an abbreviated 2-game series. It was scheduled for 4, but the Mets tied 1 game, which will have to be replayed. And another game rained out. Both the Cubs and the Pirates rained out yesterday. Hickman, a right-hand batter, and Joe Gibbon with his first pitch. Low and away, it's ball one. Fastball away. Joe Gibbon's fastball moves away from a right-hand batter. He throws a slider and curve. At the end of one, the Dodgers nothing, St. Louis nothing. Koufax against Bob Berkey. Pitch back to Jim on the inside corner. Breaking pitch, one ball, one strike. Houston at the top of the first with no run. Reds coming up. Not about going for the Astros, and Gary Arrigo pitching for Cincinnati. Philadelphia and Chicago not scheduled. They'll have 2 days off in a row. 1-1 pitch. A check and a swing, but it's in there for strike two. Pitch in the inside corner. The count now at one ball and two strikes. One man away in the top of the fourth. The Mets in front, 2-0. This game, the first of five. Friday night, a single game. Saturday afternoon, a single game. And a doubleheader on Sunday coming up. Pitch back to Jim, fouled off. Pitch down low around the knees. One ball, two strikes. They can't hold it. Tomorrow night is going to be Jack Fisher pitching for the Mets against Bob Prince. Game time will be at 8:15 New York time. We'll be on the air at 8:10. One ball, two strikes. And the pitch back to Jim. Swung on and missed, strike three. So Joe Gibbon picks up another strikeout. That is his fourth in the ball game. He now has two away in the top of the fourth. The batter, Roy McMillan, now stepping in. Roy started the Mets rally in the third when they scored two runs when he got the first hit of the game for the Mets when he singled to center field. Roy with that base hit, getting his average up to 260. He, too, has been hitting well for the Mets. Right-hand batter. And Joe Gibbon with his first pitch. It's outside, ball one. Roy going to a heavier bat and crediting that to the success that he's had of raising his average from under 200 up to 260. Roy using a bat of about 38 ounces now, which is heavy. Most batters use bats around 30. In the old days, they used them all around 40 or over. Now the 1-0 pitch, swung on and missed. Roy going for a pitch, out and away in the count now at one ball, one strike. Johnny Smith still at first base for the Mets. He singled the lead off the inning, but Ron Swoboda flied out to right field and Jim Hickman struck out. One ball, one strike on Roy McMillan. And the left-hander now look at first and back to the plate. And the pitch fouled off to the right side. And the count moves along to 1-2. One game scheduled in the American League. Minnesota won that to increase their lead to 1.5 games. Defeating Boston 4-3 as Pascal picked up his seventh win. He has not lost one this year. Billy Mon Moquette, the losing pitcher. Allison Holmgren in the second with a man on. Now the 1-2 pitch and down the right field line. Extra bases on this one. If it bounces off the wall cleanly, he'll get second. Clemente holds him at first base, even though he juggles the ball. And going over to third base is Charlie Smith. Roberto Clemente taking that line shot off the wall, playing it perfectly. And that was what stopped Roy McMillan. It was then juggled, but Roy had already made up his mind not to go against the strong-arm right fielder. So Roy with his second hit. The Mets now have runners at first and third with two away. And the batter coming up is Chris Canizaro. That ball had bounced away. Charlie Smith could have scored with no trouble. He got to third base very easily. But Clemente, who plays that ball well and who can throw as well as any of them, played it perfectly, although he did juggle the ball. Chris Canizaro, the batter, he was hit by a pitch ball his first time up. And the first pitch to him is low and inside for ball one. Down the right field line, as we mentioned earlier, 300 feet. That ball hit against the wall on the fly about 320 feet away. Caromed off to Clemente, who was about 50 feet away from the wall, right into his hand. Joe Bill Gibbons back to the plate, and the pitch taken outside, ball two. On deck batter is Galen Sisco. So Joe Gibbons working carefully to Chris Canadero. Masanori Murakami has now relieved Ron Herbel for the Giants. All this action coming in the third. A 2-0 pitch to Canizero. Low for ball three. And Joe Gibbons now at 3-0 with runners at first and third. Mets lead two runs on four hits. No runs and three hits. Three balls, no strike. Gibbons sets again. A look at first base and back to Canadero. And it's blown away, ball four. And that loads him up. First down to second base and the walk to Canadero. The first walk issued by Joe Gibbons is Roy McMillan. Holding at third base, Johnny Smith. And the batter, Galen Sisco. Eddie Matthews has hit a home run in the third for the Milwaukee Braves. They lead by at least a score of 3-1, and they're still batting. Two pitcher changes. Ron Herbel taken out. He relieved Bob Shaw in that inning. Masanori Murakami also in the ballgame for the Giants. A right-hander has appeared in 13 previous ball games. He has won three and lost none in that time. That's a total of 18 and two-thirds innings, and he'll be working to Bobby Clouse. Bobby is 0 for 2. The first pitch to Klaus is a curveball low, ball one. Bases are loaded for the Mets. Roy McMillan at third base. Chris Canizero is at second base. Then Galen Sisco at first. Mets leading by a score of 3-0. And the pitch back to the plate is ball two. Two balls, no strikes. Joe Gibbons. Credited with 3 2/3 innings work, giving up three runs so far on five hits. In that time, he struck out four and walked one. Mets scoring two runs on two hits in the third off Gibbons. Have one run on three hits here in the fourth. Now the pitch back to Klaus. It's in there for a called strike. So the count goes to two balls and one strike. The Milwaukee Braves scored nine runs in the bottom half of the third against the San Francisco Giants. They lead by a score of 10-1. One home run, Eddie Matthews in the third with one on. Now the 2-1 delivery. It's ball for ball three. And the count at 3-1 with Bobby Klaus batting. Base is loaded, so Tommy Sisk has nowhere to put him. Bobby Klaus checking with Don Hefner as to whether or not he'll be hitting or taking at 3-1. Now Sisco, right-hander, into the windup. His pitch to the plate is taken in there for a call strike two. So a full count now at 3-2, a 2 men away, and the runners will be going. This is a big pitch in the ball game. Three balls, two strikes, 2 men out, top of the fourth inning. The Mets in front, 3-0. They have the bases loaded. Now the pitcher going into the stretch position so the runners can't start too soon. The pitch back to the plate, low at ball four, and another run comes in. Forced in from third base, Roy McMillan. Chris Canizero moving over to third base. Galen Sisco down to second and on at first base with a run batted in. Here's Bobby Clouse. He took a close pitch. It was protested on slightly by Jim Pagliarone. But the Mets now lead by a score of 4-0 on the walk. That run charged against Joe Gibbons. Don Swall now throwing in the bullpen for the Pirates. And the batter coming up for the Mets is Eddie Cranefield. And he looks low at ball one. And now out to take a look and to talk with Tommy Sisk. Pitching coach Clyde King, former Brooklyn Dodgers.
And while he's out there talking, we'll pause for station identification. This is the New York Mets Baseball Network.
A 10 on the dial, WGY is connected.
Ralph Kiner along with Lindsey Nelson and Bob Murphy from Forbes Field. And now the pitch back to the plate is low and away again, ball two. Two balls, no strikes. On Eddie Grainville. Ed drove in a run in the third with a sacrifice fly to center field. He's 0-for-1 in the game. And his next pitch is looked at for a called strike. Pitch down around the knees. McCown now at 2-1. Grainville batting at 338. Now into the set position in the windup now, and there comes a pitch. It's hit into left center field. Could drop in. A long run for Bill Burton. He can't get to it. A run scores. Canizaro's going for third. Galen Sisko trying from second base. He scores, and going into second base with a double is Eddie Grainville as Bobby Klaus moves to third. So a big two out, two ball, two strike double by Eddie Grainville driving in two more runs, and the Mets lead by a score 6-0. Ball was a slicing, looping line drive in the left center field. Bill Burton tried for it. He couldn't quite get to it. Ball dropping in, and Grainville had to slide in at second as the throw came in, but he beat the throw, and the Mets have the lead by a score of 6-0. The batter coming up is Joe Christopher. Joe is 0-for-2 in the game. And he takes the first pitch. It's low for ball one. Dug out by Pagliaroni. One ball and no strike. Grainville now with three runs batted in the ballgame. Leads the club and runs batted in with 29. One more than Ron Svoboda. And Joe Christopher at 1-0. He's the ninth man to bat in this inning. And the next pitch is in there for a strike. One ball, one strike. All six runs in this game go against Joe Gibbons' record. One ball, one strike. And the right-hander back again, and a drive to left. Going back to left fielder. He can't get to it. It's over his head, off of the wall. Going from third base is Bobby Klaus. And from second base is Eddie Greenpool. The Mets now lead on a long single. That throw is played off the wall in the second base by a score of 8-0. And Joe Christopher with a 370-foot single off the wall and left. A line shot over Willie Stargell's head. Stargell played it off the wall perfectly and fired it on in. So the Mets have batted around and batting now for the second time. Johnny Smith is single to start the inning. And Joe Christopher has now extended his consecutive game streak to 10. These two runs in on Joe's single going against the record of Tommy Sisk. And the first pitch to Johnny Smith is inside, ball one. Nothing ball game at the Mets lead in the top of the fourth. And the pitch back to Charlie swung on and missed. So the count evens at 1-1. Now the right-hander looks at first, comes back again to Smith, and a line drive to center up base hit. Joe Christopher going to second base. Ball bobbled, but picked up quickly by Bill Burton, and Christopher holds it second, and Johnny Smith has had two hits in this inning. 2-for-2 for Johnny Smith. Mets getting their sixth base hit, and now out to the mound is Harry Walker, and that'll be all for Tommy Smith. Tommy came into the ballgame to pitch to Bobby Klaus with two men away. He pitched to four batters, gave up a walk, a double, and two singles in that time. Two runs charged against his record. And Don Swall, who was warming up the bullpen, is coming into the ballgame. Now throwing down in the bullpen is Wilbur Wood, a left-hander.
So John Small is coming in the ballgame. The third pitcher used in this inning. Joe Gibbon, the starting pitcher. Joe pitched first to Charlie Smith. Gave up a single, then got two outs. Runner left at first base, but then the Mets exploded for a single, a walk, a single, and that was all for Joe Gibbon. Tom Smith came in. He gave up a walk, a double, and two singles. The Mets lead by a score of 8-0. They have runners at first and second. Still 2 minutes away, and the batter is Ron Svoboda. Officially, Tommy Smith did not pitch or get credit for any inning of work, although against his record, two runs and two hits and a walk. And again, here's Lindsey Nelson to bring us up to date of the score.
All right, Ralph, in the National League, it's all night action. And at the end of three innings, it's the Milwaukee Braves 10 and the San Francisco Giants 1. Bob Shaw starts for the Giants, Ron Herbel in the third, and Masanori Murakami in the third. When the Braves got 9 runs, including a 2-run homer by Eddie Matthews, Ken Johnson pitching for the Milwaukee Braves. At the end of an inning and a half, the Los Angeles Dodgers 3 and the St. Louis Cardinals nothing. Sandy Koufax going against Bob Turkey. At the end of an inning and a half, the Houston Astros 3 and the Cincinnati Reds nothing. Don Nottebright going against Jerry Arrigo. Rusty Shaw had a 3-run homer in the second inning. Philadelphia and Chicago not scheduled in the National League. The American League, only one game scheduled today, and that was an afternoon contest in which the league-leading Minnesota Twins defeated the Boston Red Sox 4-3. Camilo Pascual, the winner, with help from Price in the eighth, Phipps in the eighth, and Nelson in the ninth. But Pascual now has won 7 games and lost none. Billy Mombuquette started and hit the loss for Boston with early relieving in the seventh inning. Bob Allison had a 2-run homer for Minnesota in the second inning. And right here, the New York Mets are leading the Pittsburgh Pirates by a score of 8-0. And we are in the top half of the fourth inning, first game of a 5-game set. The Pittsburgh Pirates having won 12 games in a row, and with Ron Svoboda coming back in here, Ralph Kiner.
Okay, Lindsey, John Swall, the pitch against Ron Svoboda. He has appeared in 8 previous ball games, worked 17 innings. He has an earned run average of 4.76 per 9 innings. And he has a record of 2-2. Don, a right-hander, and Ron Svoboda, a right-hand batter. Ron in this inning, wide out to right field. He is 0-2 in the game. Runners at first and second, two away. And the pitch to Svoboda is high, and it's ball one. One ball, no strike. Ron, the 11th man to bat here, as the Mets have scored a total of 6 runs on 6 hits. One ball, no strike. And Swall back to the plate. The pitch taken at the knees on the inside corner. One ball and one strike. Mets have not won a ball game from the Pirates this year. The Pirates swept the series in New York when they played, winning 4. Now Swall in the set position. His 1-1 delivery swung on and fouled off. That makes it a 1-2 count on Ron Svoboda. Ron has his fans out there, one of his many now, up in the top deck, the third deck here in Forbes Field. A banner which says, OAI loves Ron Svoboda. Well, this could be Ron's country around here. One ball, two strikes. Don Swall working, and the pitch back to the plate is swung on and fouled off the end of the bat. So the count will stay at 1-2. Swall going to a side on pitch, and Ron getting just a piece of the end of the bat on the ball. Mets leading by a score of 8-0 against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now time call as the ball gets away in the bullpen down the right field line. Ron Locke is loosening up in the bullpen for the Mets. It's been a long inning. And the pitch back to the plate. A check and a swing in time. A good look at it by down in the count now 2-2. Two strikes. And Swall back to the plate. A swing and a miss. Strike 3. And that ends the inning. But in the inning, the Mets add to their lead. They score 6 runs on 6 hits. There were 2 walks. 2 men left on base. And the score at the end of 3.5 innings, the Mets 8, the Pittsburgh Pirates nothing.
Bottom half of the fourth inning, the Mets leading by a score of 8-0.
scoring six runs in the top of the fourth. Their biggest inning of the year, five times now. They have scored six runs in one inning. On the mound for the Mets with the big lead is Gannon Sisko. And Gannon looking for his first win. He's contributed to the Mets' cause with two singles and two runs batted in. Gannon also has held the Pirates to no runs and three hits. He has struck out four and walked three. And he'll be pitching to Andre Rogers, who had a single his first time up in a high curve. Rogers, a right-hand batter. And the first pitch is hit off the hands, looped toward right field, going back Bobby Clouds. He can't get to it. It drops in back of him. And the Pirates have a runner at first base with no one out, and their fourth hit. Rogers batting at 352 before the base hit, so he's added on a couple more points. The batter is Jim Valerone, who struck out looking at a curve his first time up. Jim batting 230. And the first pitch to the catcher is a called strike, strike one. Jose Fagan is in the on-deck circle. The pitcher is due up next. So Jose, who was acquired from San Francisco for Schofield, will be batting for the first time against the Mets in a Pirate uniform. A changeup, and it's fouled down the dirt. Now moving to 0-2 on the catcher, Pagliarone. Ball bounced up and got the home plate umpire. And for a while there, Canizero didn't know about. Now he's getting some assistance as Chris holds on to him as he's doubled over. Coming down from first base, Al Bartik, and also Danny Whalen, the trainer of the Pirates, coming out. Ball bounced down the dirt and then bounced up. And now Mel Steiner doubled over in apparent pain. Dan Landis walking in along with Augie Donatelli as they all add their sympathy. Say, why don't you come to the Rheingold Talent Quest every Friday at 8 p.m. at the World's Fair. Amateur vocal and instrumental groups will compete for prizes in the Singer Bowl. Admission is free, so you can go to the show and enjoy yourself. And maybe see some new young talent discovered. Still time call, but Mel Steiner waving off everyone, and he's okay. It's a hand here. Probably a good-sized crowd in Phillipsville, but not like the good old days. Pirates came into the ninth game with a 12-game winning streak, and the box office has picked up. Giants scored two runs in the top of the fourth to cut Milwaukee's lead now to 10-3. Milwaukee scored nine runs in the bottom half of the third. Two-strike count on Jim Pagliarone. Time is in. A runner at first base. A curveball hit foul. Sisko coming in with a change curveball. The ball pulled down the left field line. It bounced against the stands and went out in the left field. It's picked up by Ron Swoboda. Jalen Sisko making his fourth start for the Mets. Enjoying at this point an eight-game, eight-run lead. And the right-hander now back to the plate. And the pitch fouled off. Out of play, straight back of home plate. The count stays at 0-2. Had a record of 9-24 before they started their 12-game winning streak. They are now 21-24. Again, a changeup. It's in the dirt. Dug out by Canizero. Fake throw to first base, and Rogers back to the bag. Mets have a record of 18 wins and 29 losses. They're only two wins back of the Philadelphia Phillies and the Chicago Cubs. One ball, two strikes. Sisko now sets again. His pitch. Curveball bounced fully toward short. Coming over Roy McMillan. He's up with it. He throws to Bobby Clouds, covering at second base for the force there. And exchanging at first base is Jim Pagliarone in the out. That'll bring up Jose Fagan. Batting for John Swall, batting at 205. We'll see another pitch in the ballgame. It'll be left-hander Wilbur Woods.
fourth pitcher to be used by the Pirates. You come into the top of the fifth. Pagano, right-hand batter, runner, off runner at first base. And a hard swing at the first pitch, strike one. Mets leading, 8-0. Mets have a modest two-game winning streak going for them. One strike count on Pagano. And the next delivery, a curveball, and a swing and a miss, strike two. Pagano fooled completely on a big rolling curve. It was sort of a surprise when the Giants traded Pagano off, because there was never an indication in any previous years that they were thinking about another shortstop. Picking up Schofield from Pittsburgh was not too much of a surprise, because Schofield was never really considered a strong contender for the shortstop position. Here in Pittsburgh, they liked him, but he had not measured up. Now the pitch back to the plate. One ball, two strikes. Pitch low and away, and a good play by Cannizzaro to get out in front and keep the ball from going by. Schofield was scheduled to take over and be the regular shortstop when Dick Grote was traded away, and of course they must have felt very highly about Schofield when they got rid of Grote. He never did quite measure up, although with the Giants now, he's going like a house of fire. 1-2 pitch, just outside, a slider missing off the outside corner, the count of 2-2. Pirates have been using three shortstops, interspersing them and getting good results. Andre Rogers has been the top man because his bat has been red hot. Their number one fielding shortstop is Gene Alley. He's batting at 260. Now, ground ball hit hard to short, taken on a short hop by Roy McMillan. The throw to second base for the fourth play is in time on the first base for a double play. And the Mets with their 48th double play to retire the side. 6-4-3, no runs, one hit, no errors, and no one left on. And the score at the end of four, the Mets 8, the Pittsburgh Pirates nothing. And now, once again, Lindsey Nelson.
Ralph, you know, during the brief history of the Mets, there have been many fabulous moments for Mets fans, and now they can relive them right in their own home just by getting the exciting Let's Go Mets record album. On that album, the voices of Casey Stengel, Ed Cranepool, Al Jackson, and other Mets stars, plus the most exciting parts of our play-by-play broadcast. So if you'd like to get the brand-new Let's Go Mets record album, all you have to do is send $3 to Mets Album, Shea Stadium, Flushing, New York. Repeating, if you'd like to get a copy of the Let's Go Mets record album, just send $3 to Mets Album, Shea Stadium, Flushing, New York. Wilbur Wood is the pitcher in the ballgame now for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's a left-hander, and he is the fourth Pirate pitcher of this ballgame. Joe Gibbons started, is the pitcher of record. Gibbons pitched 3 2/3, gave up 6 runs on 5 hits. This came in, faced 4 batters, was charged with 2 runs and allowing 3 hits. Don Schwall pitched a third of an inning. He retired 1 man and was removed for the pinch hitter, and now it's left-hander Wilbur Wood. Jim Hickman steps in now to lead off of the Mets. Jim has flied to right and struck out swinging so far in this ball game. Wood looks for his sign from Jim Pagliaroni. And here's the pitch. Swung on, hit on the ground to third base, second deep by Bob Bailey. A long throw over to Clendenin in time, and Hickman is out.
One away here in the top half of the fifth inning, and Roy McMillan's the batter. Roy is 2-for-2 tonight. Wilbur Woods is making his 11th game appearance. He has no won or lost record. He has pitched a total of 17 innings in which he's allowed 4 runs, 3 of them earned. And the pitch to Max is in there for a called strike. Wilbur Wood has an earned run average of 1.58. He has struck out 8. He has walked 11. One away, nobody on base. The Mets are leading by a score of 8-0. Left-hander Woods pitches low for a ball. One and one, the count to Max. Wood with the 1-1 delivery. And it misses outside for a ball. He goes behind 2-1. St. Louis Cardinals have scored 5 runs off Sandy Koufax in the bottom half of the second inning. So at the end of 2, it is the Dodgers 3 and the Cardinals 5. Here's a swing and a fly ball to right field. Going back is Clemente. He has it lined up. He's there and he makes the catch. Ball is well hit by McMillan to right. Clemente gets a good jump out here. 2 away, nobody on base, and Chris Canizaro is coming up. He's been hit by a pitch ball and walk. Right-hand batter. Tug McGraw is throwing in the Mets bullpen. Left-hander, number 45, Tug McGraw. Suddenly, Larry Miller has reported. He's been assigned number 35. Here's a pitch. It's in there for a called strike. The top half of the fifth inning of the first game of a 5-game series here at Ford Field in Pittsburgh. The pitch to Canizaro, breaking ball low, it's in the dirt. 1-1. Ford Field is equipped with the only automatic field cover in the National League. It extends from home plate up to third baseline out to short left field. Here's a swing and a foul ball back at first. A check swing. And line just foul back at first base. The Milwaukee Braves were the first in the National League to install an automatic field cover. But it never did really work out there. And they finally just dug it up and covered the trench over, filled it in. So that there's no sign of it left at County Stadium. But the one here at Forbes Field does work. Here's a breaking ball that goes high. And so there is no other field covering here. For a year or two, they used to keep the tarp rolled up around handy just in case. But the automatic field cover works so well, they've dispensed with that. 2-2 pitch. Breaking ball swung on it. In the air, a high fly ball to right. Clemente drifts back. He's underneath and waiting, and Roberto makes the catch. So Wood gets the side in order here in the top of the fifth with no runs, no hits, none left. Towards the end of 4.5 innings is the Mets 8 and the Pirates nothing. Here at Forbes Field, the Pittsburgh Pirates will be coming up, and Bob Bailey will be up to lead off in the bottom half of the fifth. We're keeping you posted on the progress of American astronauts White and McDivitt. And they are now 1 hour into their 7th orbit. They have 55 more orbits to go. And White, who has been asleep his past hour, is about to relieve McDivitt as the pilot so that McDivitt can get some sleep now. And in something like 20 minutes, they'll pass the 10-hour mark of this particular project. Right here, the Mets are leading. The Pittsburgh Pirates by a score of 8-0. Galen Sisco on the mound for the Mets. Bailey is 1-for-2. He's a right-hand batter. Sisco deals a pitch that goes high for ball one. Pirates were scheduled to have played the Philadelphia Phillies here last night, and they were rained out.
Mets were scheduled to have played the Cubs in Chicago yesterday, and they were rained out. The pitch swung on in on the ground foul back at third, on down into left field, where Swoboda now has got it ricocheted actually off the foot of Park policeman down there, and Swoboda has retrieved it. 1-1 to count. To leadoff man Bob Bailey of the Pirates, who was signed originally for a bonus estimated at $175,000. Here's the pitch low. 2-1. Bill Verdon is waiting on deck. Dodgers did not score in the top of the third, so at the end of 2.5, it's Cardinals 5 and the Dodgers 3. There's a swing and a drive foul down across the Mets bullpen, out of play in the left field corner. 2-2. Well, when the Dodgers picked up 3 runs for Sandy Koufax, you might have thought he'd be in pretty good shape, but the Cardinals came back to get 5 off Koufax and take the lead. Cisco looks in to get a side. Chris Canizaro. And the 2-2 delivery. Swung on, hit deep to center, and right there, Jim Hickman. And he makes the catch. There's a lot of room in center field at Forbes Field. One away, and that'll bring up Bill Verdon, who has roamed those acres out there for a number of years so very well. He's nothing but 2 tonight. He has grounded out second to first and struck out swinging. Burton started out in the Yankee system, went to the Cardinals in the deal that brought in a slaughter to the Yankees. There's a swing and a ground ball to first. It is a fair ball taken by Cranesville behind the bag. He jogs over to make the play unassisted. Two away, and Roberto Clemente is coming up now. He has walked and got it out. Clemente was married last November. Batting champion of the National League. He has twice held that honor. Galen Cisco with a pitch to the right-hand batter. It's bunnied up into the air foul over right end of the Mets dugout. He was thought he had found Charlie Smith playing a deep third base, and he was trying to bunny his way on. Strike one to Clemente. Cardinals have picked up another run off Sandy Koufax. Here's the pitch, and it's in for a call strike. Ken Boyer of the Cardinals has homered off Koufax to make it 6-3. Two-strike delivery, swung on and foul back, upstairs and out of play. Count holds at 2 strikes. Come up to Kool for the most refreshing coolness you can get in any cigarette. Smoke Kool Filter King. There's a swing and a ground ball up the first base line. Canizaro recovers, fires on in time. A little number, and Chris got out there in a hurry to pounce on it and throw out the speedy Roberto Clemente. The side's out in order. No runs, no hits, no errors, none left. The score at the end of 5 is the Mets 8 and the Pirates nothing. Well, Roy McMillan's had a couple of base hits in this game. He has been going great, and as usual, he turns in a spark or two each day that the Mets play, and you can find out all about Roy McMillan and all the other Mets in the brand-new revised 1965 Mets yearbook. It has all the up-to-date facts and figures on the Mets, plus 258 action photographs. As you know, from time to time, player personnel changes during the course of the season, and for that particular reason, the yearbook is updated from time to time with revised editions, and the first revised edition is now available with information on new Mets such as Chuck Hiller, who came to the Mets from the San Francisco Giants. There's a special section on Yogi Berra and one on Warren Spahn, plenty of pictures of them. So to get the new 1965 Mets yearbook, send 50 cents to Met Yearbook, Shea Stadium, Flushing, New York. Repeating the address, Met Yearbook, Shea Stadium, Flushing, New York. We'd like to call your attention, too, to An event coming up at Shea Stadium Friday, July 9th will be date night at Shea Stadium when the Mets meet the Houston Astros. There'll be Dixieland bands and other entertainment. A wife or date accompanied by a male escort will be admitted to the general admission area for 50 cents. Right now, we pause for station identification. This is the New York Mets Baseball Network.
810 on the dial, WGY is Schenectady.
This is Lindsey Nelson with Bob Murphy and Ralph Kiner at Forbes Field in Pittsburgh, and Galen Cisco is up for the Mets. Pitch is low inside for ball one. Cisco has had two big hits in this game. The Mets driving a run each time and to keep the rally alive. Wilbur Woods, the fourth Pirate pitcher of the evening, is on the mound. That pitch is in for a call strike, and it's 1-1 to Cisco. We're in the top half of the sixth inning. And the 1-1 delivery. Slow breaking ball, low, and it's 2-1. The same umpiring crew is working this game that worked the Mets series in Chicago. Umpires came on over last night. Here's a 2-1 delivery, and it's swung on a high hopper towards second. Mazeroski charges, gets rid of it in a hurry in time, and Cisco grounds out second to first. That'll bring up Bobby Clark. Bobby is nothing for two, but he hung in at a draw walk. With the bases loaded, and the top of the fourth, and of course got a run batted in. Pitch to Klaus, and it's low for a ball. Klaus back at second base tonight for the Mets, with Charlie Smith back in the lineup at third. Here's a 1-0 pitch, and it's in there for a called strike. 1-1. Ed Cranepool waiting around on deck. With a 1-1 delivery, a breaking ball swung out and missed. It's 1-2. We'll be on the air tomorrow night at 8:10 p.m. with radio and television coverage of the second game of this series. Here's a 1-2 pitch. It's in the dirt. Bounds off the arm of Jim Pagliarone. He retrieves it. Count levels at 2-2. Pagliarone came with Don Schwall to the Pirates from Boston in the deal that sent pitcher Jack LeMabe and first baseman Dick Stewart to Boston. Here's a swing and a foul ball back and out of play. 2-2 count. Every foul coming back out of play. Count holds at 2-2. Well, I think that anyone who was around here in 1960 will never forget the closing days of the National League campaign and the final day of the World Series here in 1960 when the Pirates won the World Championship. Here's a 2-2 pitch. And it's taken high away. Count runs full at 3-2. It was one of the wildest scenes imaginable around here when the Pirates clinched the championship and when they won the World Championship. Here's a payoff pitch, swung on as a high pop foul back at third. Bailey's over at the barrier, and this one's going in the seats out of play. Count holds full at 3-2. Man out, nobody on base for the Mets, batting in the top half of the sixth inning. But one thing about the National League in recent seasons, that excitement of winning the championship and playing in a World Series has been sort of spread around. 60, Cincinnati in 61, Giants in 62, Dodgers in 63. Here's a swing and a ground ball going through the hole into left field for a base hit for Bobby Clouts. Willie Stargell up with it, plays it back. Mets have a base runner with one man out, and Ed Cranepool is the batter. Ed has notched in three runs. He had a big double in the six-run rally in the top of the fourth, and he had a sacrifice fly to center to drive in a run in the third. He is one for two officially. Now Cranepool is hitting 342 for the season. The left-hander deals a pitch, swung on it on the ground to Clint Denon at first. He goes across to Rogers for one to throw back and not in time as Cranepool beats the relay. Wood took the relay there. He moved over to take the throw after Clint Denon had gone for the ball and played it to Rogers for the force. Two away, Joe Christopher coming up. The Mets are leading by a score of 8-0. Christopher had a single to drive in two runs in the six-run fourth. He's one for three. Joe has a hitting streak going now of 10 consecutive games. Wood checks the runner at first. Here's the pitch, swung on and lined over the head of Mazeroski at second into right field. And Clemente comes up with the ball, underhanded back, and Cranepool holds at second. Christopher with his second hit of the night. And that will bring up Charlie Smith. Charlie coming back into the lineup tonight is two for three. He had been sidelined with an upper respiratory infection. Two men on. The Mets leading by a score of 8-0 in the top half of the sixth inning at Forbes Field in Pittsburgh. Wilbur Wood is up and set. Runners lead first and second. Here's a pitch to Charlie. Swung out and missed for strike one. Charlie Smith has a season's batting average right now of .286. He is hitting cleanup tonight and manages singles batting order. There's a breaking ball that's in there for a called strike. A two-strike count to Smith. Ron Swoboda is on deck. Looks for a sign as runners lead first and second. Two-strike delivery, and it's a check swing pop out toward the bag at second, and Andy Rogers makes the catch. So the side is out with no runs on two hits, no errors, two left, and the score at the end of 5.5 is the Mets 8 and the Pirates nothing. Yet here at Forbes Field tonight, the official paid attendance is 9,169. Ladies, 2,070, and total in the ballpark, 11,239. We'll be going to the bottom half of the sixth inning, and Willie Stargell will be up to lead off for the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Houston Astros have scored another run in the fourth inning. So going to the bottom of the fourth, it is Houston 7 and Cincinnati nothing. Arrigo out of the ballgame. Satoris in the fourth inning for Cincinnati. Don Nottebart still pitching for the Houston Astros. Rusty Staub at a three-run homer in the second inning for Houston. Stargell has grounded out and walked so far tonight. Daigle, left-hand batter. Cisco's pitch swung on and lined to second, where it is off the webbing of the glove of Clouts on out into right field for a base hit. It was a line shot, and Clouts went up into the air to try just to snare it, but he couldn't flag that one down. It was hit a shot. Went on out into right, where it was picked up by Christopher and played back in, and now Clem Dunnett is up. Don Clem Dunnett is grounded out and popped out so far. Francisco off the stretch. And the pitch to the right-hand batter is inside for a ball. The Mets are leading by a score of 8-0 in the bottom half of the sixth inning. Charger leads at first. Crane Boo playing behind the runner. Here's a pitch of breaking ball low. Francisco goes behind 2-0 now to Don Clendenin. Let's play him straight away. He has excellent speed. Francisco sets for the 2-0 delivery. Long on and on the ground. The shortstop. McClellan over the cross for one. The relay to first, and he's safe. And Clendenin beat the relay with his good speed. But they got the... Francisco sets for the 2-0 delivery. Long and on the ground. The shortstop. McClellan over the cross for one. The relay to first, and he's safe. And Clendenin beat the relay with his good speed. But they got the lead man, Willie Stargell. He let McClellan to Klaus one away, and Bill Mazeroski's getting up. As it walked and lined out to left field so far. With the bases loaded in the bottom of the third, Maz lined the ball to left field, but Ron Svoboda had good position and flagged it down to the out. Disco off the stretch to the right-hand batter. Fun it on the ground is short. Taken there by Mackin over to Klaus for one. The throw to first this time, a double play. It goes 6-4-3, and the side is out with no runs, one hit, no errors, none left. And the score at the end of six is the Mets 8 and the Pirates nothing. In the seventh inning, the New York Mets have Ron Svoboda leading off against left-hander Wilbur Wood. Wilbur took over for Pittsburgh back in the fifth inning. He's worked two innings, allowed no runs, given up two hits. Here's the pitch to Ron, a swing and a miss and a fastball, strike one. Ron has bounced out to the mound, lined to right, and been struck out, nothing for three. The Mets have 8 runs on 10 base hits. A curve, a swing and a miss, strike two on Svoboda. Probably the key RBIs of the game to date. The two driven in by Galen Sisko. He drove in the first run. With the bases loaded, two men down. And he drove in the second, the third run. Way inside, Ron had to bail out in a hurry. They're double-checking. Actually, Galen drove in the first run with runners on second and third. Nobody out. They pulled the infield in, and he singled. Crane Pool sacrifice fly drove in the second run. A towering infield pop fly by the mound. Coming in is Don Clendenin, called off by Bailey, and third baseman Bailey grabs it. Midway between home plate and the pitcher's mound. But the biggest hit of them all for Galen came in the six-run fourth inning. The Mets had the bases loaded. There were two men away. Galen Sisko single to right. For his second hit and second RBI, that made it 3-0, and the Mets went on to score 5-4 runs. They got all 6 runs in the fourth inning after two were down. Now Jim Hickman batting against Wood, and he whacks it foul back upstairs and out of play. Wilbur Wood, young left-hander from Belmont, Massachusetts, was originally given a large bonus to sign with the Red Sox. Fenway Park in Boston, a very tough ballpark for a left-hander unless you're overpowering or have a great sinker. Here's the pitch on the way, whacked foul, and Hefner had to get out of the way in a hurry. Wilbur had a good minor league record. He won 15 games out of Seattle last year, but the Red Sox did not feel that he had the kind of stuff for a small ballpark and an inviting target for right-hand hitters. Pittsburgh, on the other hand, has a big ballpark for a pitcher, and particularly big for the right-hand hitters. They felt Wilbur Wood could help them a great deal. Inside, letter high. One ball and two strikes on Jim Hickman. We're in the seventh.
2 delivery. Check swing and a foul ball drifting back toward the visiting dugout. Roy McMillan is the on-deck batter. The Mets sitting in the visiting seventh. A swing and a miss, he got him on a big curveball. Strike out for Wilbur Wood. His first since he took over in relief. Now there are two away, and the batter is Roy McMillan. Roy has two hits and two times at bat. Two hits and three times at bat. They got him out the last time up. And the curve is over for a call strike. In the fourth inning, he singled to right field with two men. down and Charlie Smith on first. Charlie went around to third. Canizero walked to load the bases, then Cisco singled in a run. Off the outside corner, one ball and one strike. Pitching, one and one. A ground ball hit toward the hole. Running to his left side is Mazeroski. He comes up, throws to Clinton, and in time, and his bat is up. Three up and three down in the visiting seventh inning, and the score at the end of six and a half innings. The New York Mets 8 and the Pittsburgh Pirates nothing. Half of the seventh inning, the Bucks coming up against Galen Cisco. Andy Rogers will be leading off, and Rogers has two hits and two times at bat. He has two of the five given up by Galen Cisco. So Rogers is now hitting 364. Rogers came to the Pittsburgh Pirates in the winter in a deal with Chicago in which Pittsburgh gave up a rookie shortstop, Roberto Pena, and quite a bit of money. Here's the windup and the pitch, a drive in deep toward left center field. Ron Swoboda won't be able to reach it. This is an extra base hit rolling back toward the wall, and Rogers comes into second, standing up with his third hit of the game. Double in the seventh inning by Rogers. That'll bring up Jim Pagliaroni, and the Pittsburgh catcher has been struck out, reached on a force play. Warm-up action in the Pirates bullpen now, indicating that Harry Walker will go to a pinch batter. Manny Mota has come out on deck to hit for Wilbur Woods. And the curve is over. Strike one call. And a left-hander is warming. If he comes in, he'll be the third southpaw that Harry Walker has used tonight. Now the pitch by Galen. Low and inside. One ball, one strike on Pagliaroni. Bag a right-hand batter, and he'll pull the ball. Throw the Mets flame around toward left of the outfield. Breaking ball, outside and low, two balls and a strike. Larry Miller is now loosening up for the New York Mets. Larry joined the ball club in Pittsburgh. Larry had won six and lost only one with a 2.5 ERA at Buffalo. Then he ran back and has taken his place on the Buffalo pitching staff. One delivery. Outside, ball three. Galen is behind now, 3-1 on Pagliaroni. Now Galen slowing himself down. This is the longest stretch that Cisco has worked this year. 3-1 delivery. bounced foul. He went after it. It's back toward the visiting dugout behind third. So now the string is out, 3-2. Outfielder Manny Mota is out of the on-deck circle. He'll be batting for pitcher Wilbur Wood. The Mets 8 and the Pirates nothing. We're in the last of the seventh. The 3-2 is popped high in the air, back toward the backstop. Dennis Earl, hoping for a play, has room and grabs it. So Pagliaroni on 3-2 fouls out to Dennis Earl. Now Manny Mota, right-hand batter, will be hitting against Galen Fisco with one out and one on. Manny has been platooning in center field with Bill Burton. Burton playing against the right-hand pitching and Manny Mota against the left-hander. Manny Mota is the second pinch hitter that Harry Walker has called on. He used Jose Pagan in the fourth inning, and Jose hit into a double play. Pitch by Galen Fisco, a Baltimore chop off the plate, hit toward second. Grabbed by Klaus, he throws just in time to get him. Moving on to third goes Andy Rogers. Bobby had to hurry, that ball bounced off home plate, and then went out toward second. Leadoff batter Bob Bailey has one hit and three times at bat. He beat out a base hit to deep shortstop back in the third inning. And until Andy Rogers crossed over to third while Mota was being thrown out, Bailey had been the only Pirate runner as far as third base. Breaking ball over, strike one. Galen trying to win his first victory over the Pittsburgh Pirates. He tried to bunt and he missed to take the third. Save, and it was close. Rogers was almost picked off. Canizero whipping the ball to Charlie Smith. Bailey trying to bunt for a base hit and get a run home, but he missed on the bunt attempt. Galen out of his windup. Here's the pitch. Low and outside, 1-2. We'll be on the air at 8:10 tomorrow night with the second of this five-game series. The Saturday afternoon game will be on at 1:30. And on Sunday, the doubleheader at 1 p.m. Fisco delivers 1-2. Outside it low. Chris digging it out of the dirt. It's two balls and two strikes. Bobby Klaus playing almost behind second against full hitter Bob Bailey. Andy Rogers on third with two men down. Pitching 2-2. Outside ball 3 and the string goes out 3-2. Galen has walked 3 and struck out 4. Allowed no runs and 6 base hits. This has been Galen's most impressive pitching performance, and this is the longest stretch he has worked. Ball 4, he lost him. So that is the fourth walk surrendered by Cisco. Now the Bucks have runners at first and third. Two men down and Burton coming up. Burton has bounced to second, been struck out, and bounced to first, nothing for 3. A veteran outfielder hitting at 297. Left-hand hitter against right-hand pitcher. Here's the pitch to him, a drive in the air to center field. Drifting back is Jim Hickman. He's there. Makes the catch. Brissette is out. Burden skies to rather deep center on the first delivery, and the side is out. No runs, one hit. No errors, two left. At the end of seven innings, the score of the New York Mets 8 and the Pittsburgh Pirates nothing. Bob Murphy with Lindsey Nelson and Ralph Kiner. We go to the eighth inning here at Pittsburgh. The Mets in front 8-0. Canizaro leading off against Carpen fouls it back to the crowd, strike one. Chris has been hit by a pitch, drawn a walk, and flied to right. Frank Carpen is on a relief for the fourth time. A bouncing ball whacked to short. Handled by Andy Rogers to play to first and then one down. One out and nobody on. That'll bring up Galen Sisco. Well, Galen has had quite a night. He has shut out the Pirates over seven innings. He's had two hits, driving in key runs both times. And Galen gets a hand as he comes up. But now Galen steps in against Brooklyn-born Frank Carpen. Frank, a 25-year-old southpaw, was born in Brooklyn, makes his winter home now in Richmond, Virginia. Originally, he started out in the Yankee farm system and was drafted by Pittsburgh from Columbus, Georgia in the 64 winter meetings. One ball, one strike on Sisco, and now Galen steps out. Carpen cranks up. Down comes the pitch, and it's outside to Galen. Frank Carpen was really used out of that bullpen in Richmond last year. He was in 69 ball games. 1-5 and lost 3 and had a 2.7 earned run average. Pitching 2-1. Foul ball hit down the right field line and up into the upper deck. In the second inning with runners on second and third and nobody out. The infield playing in, Galen bounced one through the middle, scoring Roy McMillan with the first run of this ball game. Grainful's sacrifice fly made it 2-0. A swing and a miss, he struck him out. Galen is fanned by Frank Carpen. The big explosion came in the fourth inning. The bases loaded and two men down. Galen Sisco singled to right, scoring McMillan once again. That made it 3-0. Bobby Klaus walked on 3-2 with the bases loaded, forcing in a run. That made it 4-2. Eddie Cranepool then doubled to left center, driving in the fifth and sixth run. And Joe Christopher singled off the wall and left, driving in the seventh and eighth. Outside to Bobby Klaus, one ball and no strikes. Bobby got a hit his last time up, has 1-for-3 and a walk. By Carpet is over for a strike. One ball, one strike. Slow curve that drifts into the knees for a strike. 1-2 on Klaus. It's inside of the knees, 2-2. Eddie Cranepool waiting on deck. As the Rheingold Chug-A-Mug is a wide-mouth glass bus that holds 12 ounces of beer, and it even feels right when you pick it up. They're just about the handiest thirst quenchers in town. You'll find special Chug-A-Mug displays in your area. Bobby takes. The count goes to 3-2. Now Carpenter over the head. Down comes the pitch. Foul ball wafts it back out of play, and the count remains 3-2. A bouncing ball hit towards second to his right is Mazeroski. He comes up throwing, and it's in time for the out. So Frank Harpin comes on to get the side 1-2-3 in the eighth inning. No runs, no hits, no errors, none left. At the end of 7.5 innings, the score of the Mets 8 and the Pirates nothing. Roberto Clemente will be up against Galen Fisker in the last of the eighth inning. Clemente has drawn a walk, single to left, and been thrown out by Chris Cannizzaro when he tapped one out in front of the plate. Now Fisker winds. Here's his pitch. Outside and low, he came sidearm with it. One ball and no strikes. And a scribbler foul down the third baseline. Once again, he went for a high breaking ball. Very similar pitch to the one that he was thrown out on by Cannizzaro his last time up. The Mets were rained out yesterday, Tuesday afternoon, in beating Chicago 10-5. They had a six-run inning in the fourth. And now tonight, the Mets had a six-run inning. Five times in the young season, the Mets have scored as many as six runs in one inning. Foul ball hit down the third baseline by Clemente. They're in the ninth inning now in Milwaukee. Braves leading the Giants 10-3. In the fourth inning in St. Louis, the Dodgers came up with four runs in chasing Bob Perkey. The Dodgers and the Cardinals are now tied 7-7 after 3.5. Low and outside. Now it's 2-2 on Roberto Clemente. Both of the starters, Sandy Koufax and Bob Perkey, are out of it. And the game is tied 7-7 after 3.5 innings. The left center field way out by the wall in left center, and it's off the wall, hangs into the vines, now drops down to the track. Clemente is digging for third, he's done with a triple. A 406-foot triple by Roberto Clemente. The ball struck in the vines, but just about cover the brick wall. Then dropped right straight down on the track. Right at the 406-foot mark. What a clout by Clemente. Willie Stargell is the batter. Stargell has passed to second, drawn a walk, single to right. A long hit by Roberto, the seventh in the ballgame for the Bucks. Fisco into his windup, now the pitch. Outside to Willie Stargell. Don Clendenin is on deck. Gary Kroll and Frank Larry, who are midway between starts, are loosing in the bullpen. And the changeup is a high drive, hit deep to right field, and this one is down for a home run. Field for a two-run homer is 11th home run of the year. Now Casey has gone to the mound, and this will be all for Galen Cisco. Galen has missed a strong game. This is the furthest he has gone this year. He had arm trouble during the spring and was unable to get on track at the start of the year. So this has been the first real good outing for Galen Cisco, and this has been a good one. Larry Miller is quickly going to work in the bullpen. Along with Tom Parsons. Gary Kroll and Frank Larry were just tuning up for future starting assignments Saturday and Sunday. And so now Larry Miller is coming in the ballgame, and he's coming in having thrown only about four warm-ups. Larry was not in the bullpen, Larry Miller, that is, when Casey went to the mound. And now Larry Miller is being brought in. He'll have eight tosses on the mound, and that's all he'll be working with, although he did warm up earlier in the ballgame tonight. So now the hand is for Galen Cisco. In seven innings, allowed two runs, gave up eight hits. He walked four and struck out four. And hard-throwing Larry Miller is now in the ball game for New York. Larry acquired during the winter in a swap with the Dodgers. Was impressive in the spring. The Mets felt that he needed work under fire. He opened with Buffalo. He had 1-6 and lost only one and had an ERA of 2.5. So Denny Ryan has been sent to Buffalo, and Larry Miller now takes his place for the Mets pitching staff. Larry was with the Dodgers most of last year. He got off to a fast start in the minors. The Dodgers brought him up. He was pitching well. He hurt his knee in September, and that hampered him the rest of the way. The hitter is Dan Glendenna. Glendenna is 0 for 3. A bounce to third, pop to short, reached in a fourth play. Bullet down the third base line, a beauty of a bunt. The play by Smitty, he did out a base hit. Glendenna and Bunny for a base hit, and the Pirates are picking up momentum. Johnny Smith made the play perfectly, but simply not in back. Raced in, picked it up with his bare hand, threw accurately, all in the same motion, but not in time. Now the hitter is Bill Mazeroski. Doug McGraw and Tom Parsons are warming up for New York. Mazeroski, right-hand batter, facing Larry Miller. Curve a little bit outside, one ball and no strike. Larry Miller has been winning as a starting pitcher at Buffalo. Larry will be pitching out of the bullpen with the New York Mets. Nobody out as he pitches to Mazeroski. A foul ball hit towards the middle. And he hits the center. And then around second is leading his way on the third. And the Bucks have four consecutive hits. That hot grounder. An inch or so beyond the reach of Bing Billen. It was almost a twin killing. He was hit hard by Mass through the middle for a base hit, four hits in a row by Pittsburgh. Now there are runners on first and second. Still nobody out, and the hitter is Andre Rogers. He is really hot. He's had 3 for 3 in the ball game today. Last time up, a long double. He's hitting 364. The pitch by Miller is fouled upstairs and out of play. Larry had very little time to get ready. He was not warming up when Casey went to the mound. So he had only four or five quick warm-up tosses in the bullpen and then came to the mound. First and third. The pitch, a line drive in the air to the right field. It's going to be a base hit. Five in a row. Then Dunham has scored the third pilot run. Four gets away from Christopher, giving on to third goes Mazeroski, and Rogers goes to second. It's 1-1, a base hit and an error. And the Pirates are very quickly fighting back into this ballgame. Standing here at Bucks Field. The Bucks have a 12-game win streak on the line. They now have rattled off 5 straight hits. Once again, Casey goes to the mound. That's 4 hits and 4 times at bat for Rogers. He went on to second on the error charge to Christopher in the outfield. Now, and Tom Parsons is coming in to see what he can do about it. Jim Pagliaroni will be coming up. And Harry Walker still has a lot of pinch hitting that he can call on. He has men like Jerry Lynch and Gene Freeze still in the dugout, along with Ozzy Virgil, Gene Alley, and Del Crandall. Earlier in the ball game, he used two of his lesser pinch hitters, Jose Pagan and Manny Mota. Now Tom Parsons is the third pitcher in the inning. Tom throwing in his warm-up. Runners on second and third, and nobody out. The Pirates have 5 straight hits. Lemony's 406-foot double to left center. Sargent's 11th home run of the year, a 2-run shot. A bunt single by Clendenin, a ground single through the middle by Mazeroski, and a line single to right by Rogers. It's over at County Stadium in Milwaukee. The Braves beat the Giants tonight 10-3. Ken Johnson all the way was the winning pitcher. Starter Bob Shaw, the loser for the Giants. The Braves scored 9 of their 10 runs in the third inning. The only American League game schedule was played this afternoon, with Minnesota tightening the grip on first place by beating the Red Sox 4-3. His fast ball won his 7th game without a loss. Here we go. Jim Pagliaroni, 6'3" right-hand batter, stepping in against Tom Parsons. 3 runs are in. The Pirates, if they pick up the 2 in scoring position, are really back in it. Gene Freeze loosening up down in the Pirate dugout. The pitcher's due up next. Now Jerry Lynch is also around the bat rack. Here's the pitch on the way. Inside, ball one. Started against the Pirates over the weekend at Shea Stadium, worked 5 innings in the starting rule. The tall right-hander winds and pitches a high drive to deep right center. Way back goes Christopher. He's getting under it, makes the catch in deep right center. Mazeroski comes down the line to score, and Rogers tags and goes to third after the catch. Up in the right center so that it not only scored a run, but moved a runner from second to third. Now pinch hitter deluxe Jerry Lynch will bat for Frank Carpin, the Pittsburgh pitcher. Jerry left-hand pinch-hitter in one of the best the game's ever known.
A high drive that is in deep to right field. It is up, and there it is. A home run.
Trailing 8-0, it now is an 8-6 ball game. Again, Casey has gone to the mound. Now, Jim Buskey and Frank Lurie are warming in the bullpen. That was the 17th pinch hit home run in Jerry Lynch's career, which is a major league record. Billy Cowan and Johnny Lewis are quickly warming their arms up for defensive maneuvers. And the Pirates are on the verge of making one of the greatest comebacks in a ball game that's pulled off, been pulled off in a long, long, long time. Parsons remains in. Larry and Besky are warming in the bullpen, and now Casey comes out of the dugout. He was stalling for more time for his bullpen. And now the changes are going to be in the outfield. Cowan and Lewis have been warming up down the left field line. You need a lot of speed in the outfield at this big ballpark. So now Casey goes over to the third base umpire, Stan Landis, to signify the changes that Casey wants made in the outfield. Johnny Lewis will replace Joe Christopher in right field. Johnny Lewis goes to right, relieving Joe Christopher as a defensive move. Frank Lurie and Jim Buskey warming up as rapidly as they can in the bullpen. Casey has gone back to his dugout. He's trying to get as much time for his bullpen as he can, and you cannot blame him for that. It's a chilly night, and things are happening so fast, he's trying to stop the momentum. Six runs are in for the Pirates. Six runs in on six hits, only one out. Now Billy Cowan goes to left field, replacing Ron Swoboda. Billy Cowan to left field, Ron Swoboda coming up. New York in the outfield now has Billy Cowan in left, Jim Hickman in center, and Johnny Lewis in right. Parsons has faced two hitters. Pagliaroni hit one about 390 to drive in a run. It was caught. And Jerry Lynch hit one over the screen for a two-run homer. The Bucks have had two home runs in this inning. They've got six runs in on six hits. The Mets have a two-run lead. Now the windup by Parsons. And the pitch to Bailey is high. One ball and no strike. The Mets came in to the last of the eighth inning with a lead of 8-0. It is now 8-6. Here's the wind-up pitch on the way. Bounce foul by Bailey. One ball, one strike. Bill Verdon is the on-deck batter. Bailey's the eighth man up in the inning. Clemente led this inning off, and so the big Pirate guns are about set to come up again. Bailey, a long ball hitting Curtis, the batter now, though he's the leadoff hitter. The 1-1 pitch, low and outside, 2-1. Tom Parsons pitching in relief. Right-hander winds and pitches a strike on the ground to short. McMillan up with it. The pig across the diamond, two men down. Bailey grounded hard to shortstop. Two men out. Now Bill Burton is coming up. Burton is 0 for 4. Bill Burton is the ninth man to bat in the inning. Parsons batting in on his target. Here's his pitcher on the way. Outside and high, it's ball one. And you can bet Parsons would love to get Burton, so he'd have some money as a leadoff hitter instead of coming up with somebody on base. Now the left-hand hitter waits, and the pitch gets the outside corner for a strike. One ball and one strike. Six runs are in on six hits, including two-run homers. Team has had a six-run inning. A smash right back to the mound, knocked down by Parsons. He throws to first, the side is out. That was a line drive, but it was hit right back at Parsons, who knocked it down with his glove. And then threw to first for the third out. Six runs, six hits, one error, none left on. But the Pirates throw a tremendous scare into the Mets in the last of the eighth inning, and they'll be within reach when they hit the ninth. At the end of eight innings, to score now, the New York Mets 8 and the Pittsburgh Pirates 6. Bob Murphy with Lindsey Nelson and Ralph Kiner. Al McBean is now the new pitcher. Jerry Lynch, who hit a two-run homer as a pinch hitter, had established a major league record by doing so, stays in the ballgame and goes to left field. Al McBean will be hitting in Bill Burton's spot. Burton made the last out. So the Pirate outfield has Jerry Lynch in left. Roberto Clemente is playing center, and Willie Stargell has moved over to right. Now the eighth fireman on the Pittsburgh staff. Al McBean is pitching to Eddie Crane Boone as we go to the ninth. Outside and high, ball one. McBean is the sixth pitcher that Harry Walker has called on. Right in for a strike, Eddie. Eddie has driven in 3 runs tonight for the Mets with a sacrifice fly and a 2-run double. So Eddie has 1 for 3 and 3 RBIs. He now leads the club in RBIs, taking over the leadership from Ron Swoboda. A liner hit beyond the reach of Rogers into left center for a base hit. Lynch plays the ball back in, and Eddie Cranepool has his second hit. Now Johnny Lewis will be hitting for the first time. He went to right field replacing Christopher to tighten up the defense when the Pirates were scoring runs. Johnny Lewis, the batter against Al McBean. McBean has been given credit for saving 8 victories for the Pirates this year. They look for the bunt. The pitch to Johnny Lewis, a strike on the outside corner. Bob Skinner, a former Pirate, has hit a 2-run homer for the Cardinals in the last of the 5th inning. And in that high-scoring battle between the Dodgers and the Cards are back in front. He bunts it, foul, no play, and the count strike 2. St. Louis 9, the Los Angeles Dodgers 7, with the Cardinals hitting in the last of the 5th inning. Houston behind Don Nadebard, out in front of Cincinnati, 8-1. They're the last of the 7th of Cincinnati. Right here, what was an 8-0 ball game is now 8-6 in favor of New York. The Pitch to Lewis, a ground ball to second base. Mazeroski goes to second for one. Rogers to first. Not in time. Lewis gets there ahead of the throw. One out and one on. Charlie Smith coming up. Charlie has two for four. Frank Larry and Larry Benares are warming up for New York. Pittsburgh in the ninth inning. We'll have Clemente, Stargell, and Clem Benin. There are three big hitters coming up. Now the pitch. Chopped foul off the plate, going off to the left side. No play. So Harry Walker, the Pittsburgh manager, has the three men he would call on first to come up and hit. As the Bucks hit in the last of the ninth inning. So the Mets would love to pick up another run or two if they possibly can. Off to the left side, no play. So Harry Walker, the Pittsburgh manager, has the three men he would call on first to come up and hit. As the Bucks hit in the last of the ninth inning. So the Mets would love to pick up another run or two if they possibly can. Throw to first, not in time. Now the pitch underway. It's too high. Charlie lets it go. One ball, one strike. Billy Cowan in the on-deck circle. He relieves Ryan Slapota in left field. Now the 1-1 pitch. Foul ball hit him off the fist with a good pitch. Back toward the press box. One out and one on in the ninth inning. McBean in front on the count. The 1-2 pitch. Inside of the letters, two balls and two strikes. Another Cardinal homer against Dodger pitching in the fifth inning by Julian Javier. Nobody on. So the Cardinals have at least three runs in. And they're leading the Dodgers by at least 10-7 in the last half of the fifth inning. The 2-2 pitch, a ground ball, foul down the third baseline. You usually won't score 10 runs off that Dodger pitching staff in three or four ball games. Johnny Lewis is on first. Charlie Smith is the batter. Al McBean in relief. Down comes his pitch, and it's a foul ball that's not playable. Back up into the crowd. Quite a few of the fans left before that six-run explosion by the Bucks. The Mets were sailing along with an 8-0 lead coming into the last of the eighth inning. Roberto Clemente's 406-foot triple started things up. Here's the 2-2 delivery. Low and outside. Now a full count, 3-2. Charlie has hiked his batting average down at 283. Charlie has real good power, and Jerry Lynch, the left fielder, is flying him almost back to the track in left field. Now Lewis edging off. There he goes. Here's the pitch. A foul ball wafted out of play over behind the third base dugout. Johnny Lewis is the base runner at first with one out at 3-2, and let's see if Casey has him running again. Now the stretch by McBean. There goes Lewis. A high fly to center field. Lewis slams on the brake. Lemini drifting in, he's under it. Makes the catch, two men down. So two outs in the top of the ninth inning, and Billy Cowan will be up for the first time. To the outfield for Ron Swoboda. Ron had gone hitless and four times up. Here's the pitch by McBean. A foul ball that knocked the helmet right off of Cowan's head. Billy grabs his forehead. Trainer Gus Mott hurrying out of the dugout, but Billy says, "I'm all right. Don't worry about me." That ball came back. It fouled off the bat handle into the dirt, bounced up, and knocked the helmet right off of Billy's head. And Frank Larry are keeping warm in the New York bullpen. Here's the pitch. Ground ball hit down to third, handled by Bailey. He throws to second, forced play on Lewis. The side is out. So, we'll be going to the last of the ninth inning. The Pirates trailing by two, and their big hitters coming up. No runs, one hit, no errors, one left on. At the end of eight and a half innings, the score, the New York Mets 8, and the Pittsburgh Pirates 6. If you've been wondering what Swedish Americans sing after the smorgasbord, listen to this.
Turalari is a song that Swedish Americans sing over and over at their parties and picnics until they raise a fearful thirst. Then they change their tune. Halon Gore is a traditional Swedish drinking.
Unfortunately, we are missing the audio for the Pirates' last of the ninth. Here's a recap of what happened. Roberto Clemente struck out, and Willie Stargell grounded out from pitcher to shortstop to first, and Don Clendenin flied to right field. Nothing across. The final score was the Mets 8, Pirates 6. Mets had 8 runs, 11 hits, 1 error, and 6 left on base. And Pittsburgh had 6 runs, 12 hits, no errors, and 8 left on base.